All righty, everybody. Joel Radio's back. How you doing out there? Thanksgiving week here in the United States of America. And got a couple of turkeys with me today. It's going to be a fun one.
Gobble, gobble.
Yeah, Corey Hall's over there. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, good.
Corey Hall is here.
We all remember the immortal Geely with Ben Affleck.
Well, what happened in Geely?
It's the worst, but...
No, I'm sure.
There's a scene in which Jennifer Lopez lays on a bed and says, "It's gobble, gobble time."
Oh, well, I miss that. And we got another guest. We'll talk to her in a minute.
We've already offended her.
She left already. There she goes.
There it is.
I like, it's funny. My guests, and I found some good guests coming out of my comedy class, Corey.
Yeah.
Like Ted Moss, who was on recently.
Well, that's debatable.
Okay, now I'm going to talk about that before we introduce our current guest. Because Ted Moss is going to do this comedy tour. If you haven't heard it, two shows back, I had Ted Moss in here for the whole show, no Corey. And what I heard, and I've heard this from more than one person, and I know we talked about you a little bit while you weren't here. That is a hot feud.
We are
building for WrestleMania.
Okay.
When we get Ted back in here and you guys are in the same room.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of demand to hear you guys mix it up now.
Okay.
Because of the previous show when he was here and then the show when you weren't here and with just Ted, there are people, more than one, who have said, "I got to hear Ted and Corey again in the same room."
I heard some other feedback.
No. I heard. Listen, what did you hear?
I have my fans.
Yeah.
That,
okay. No.
That inbox me and say what when
you
I'm
should,
not
you should
when
have
I'm
fans.
Not on the show they go oh, I turned it off. Then
that's fine. So. That's fine. That's good. Well, that's not the point. Isn't the show is better or worse without you or without
I'm
Ted?
Ready, look,
but the difference is that it's when Ted and you.
Okay.
People like that you don't like Ted and that Ted doesn't like you, and that's what they like.
Okay.
And I like both of you,
I'm not going to sell the rub. All right.
Sell the rib. It's called selling the rib.
Whatever.
The rub.
Yeah,
there's the rub is something else. The rub
the
and the rib. Rib are different.
Yeah, you're right. The rib.
But yeah. So
Speaking
I think
which,
Ted is.
Is gonna... Mick Rib back? I've heard rumors.
Call PJ.
Hold on. Let me call PJ.
All right. Ted is going to start. I think he's starting his comedy tour in like 2 weeks. So hopefully we'll get some call-ins from him.
Oh,
and whatever.
We'll get some Charles Carralt on the road reports from him.
I don't know. And Billy Reno, you know, the guy that's going with him, where I did most of my interview.
No opinion whatsoever of Billy Reno.
I'm
neutral on that. No heat with Billy Reno.
No, Billy Reno's great. But Billy came up to me and goes, "Hey, I want to thank you for taking my position." You know, because so much of that interview was, you know, what are you doing to poor Billy? You know, Billy, I go, "Billy's not going to complain about this, so let me tell you what Billy's complaints are going to be." And Billy went up to me and said, "Hey, Joel, thanks for taking my point of view, even though he says he's 100% on board." But that will change. I know people.
It's going to change.
I know comedy.
It's going to change by the Ohio Turnpike.
I know Ted Moss.
It's going to change. That's going to.
But, you know, both Ted and Billy were my students. Those guys are funny. Like I said, if you see Ted and Billy...
And look what it's gotten them.
But
Winnebago to nowhere.
But you know what?
That's what it's gotten
Ted
them.
And Billy are perfectly competent entertainers. Yeah. I just don't know if they're going to have a good time playing at the truck stop for no money and smelling each other's farts for
no,
3 months.
No,
I don't think that's
no,
going to be
no
a thing
one,
that's going
to no
work.
No one does. That's called comedy. What else is on the program today, Joel?
All right, well, let's introduce my student, who I... she likes to be introduced. As my very best student of comedy, she likes, and it's—I don't think it's untrue. It's hard. It's hard to pick your favorite. You're like my children.
Wow.
Some of you I like, and some I want to beat the shit out of, and have nothing to do with. Melissa Hager's here. Give it up for Melissa Hager.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this glamorous studio.
Yeah.
Don't you love the Joel Radio Studios?
I do.
The Palacios Studios?
I do. It's everything and more than what I imagined.
Well, it's
driving down here. I was like, oh my gosh. What's going to happen? Where are we going?
We're here.
What is this?
It really is a factory of dreams.
No, I am super honored to be here. Thank you for asking me to be on the show today.
Well, it's good to have you.
This
you got a
exciting.
lot, uh, You know, I've known Melissa for how long ago? I mean, you did the class, but I met you before the class. And you,
I don't think you did.
Well, there was some sort of thing where you came to a show, and then you messaged me and were like, I'm doing this.
Yep.
But I felt like I saw you because you asked. I know we've talked about this before, and you've said you asked for permission to take the class and skip Bill Bouchard's beginner comedy class.
Well, because a headliner that I had met had suggested, if I'm going to produce shows, you should get some kind of education. And I'm all about that. I might be a college dropout, but I'm all about getting educated.
Okay.
And he saw my very first show and said, yeah, you can put a decent joke together, but you still need education. And he suggested I contact you.
And so I said, you come do the class. It's fine. I think you're good to skip that one because you have a little bit of experience. You can stand on stage. Sam Silverstein was the guy who's been on the show and did the same thing for Sam. He had done the beginner class. I said, just come take mine. And
on the off chance that you're listening to this show and you've never done stand-up comedy before.
Yeah.
I need to just, if you're thinking about doing comedy and you want to do comedy, I would first of all say don't.
Well,
I would second of all say, your first show, don't take any impression, advice, or anything. All you have to do on your very first time you go on stage is survive.
Well, well Corey, my first show was really unique. You would be surprised if you saw what I did for my first show.
But you can't base anything that happens your first
time. No, because there's...
Don't make no decisions about comedy until you've done it 100 times.
Yeah.
In minimum.
That's 100 times is your first year in comedy. I don't care how long you've actually been doing it. 100 shows is your first year. That's the way you got to look at it. And, you know, you hadn't done that many, but I thought you had some talent and you've done great. And now you're a promoter. We're going to talk about all that stuff. You promote your own shows. You hired Corey Hall to do a show.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you make mistakes.
Well, I asked Joel first and he shot me down.
I shot you down because I am employed at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. I need to be there on the weekend.
And I do weekend shows.
I am retired, essentially, from the road. You can make me an offer, and I can make myself free.
Ooh, he's going to have me keep crawling back. You
but your offer did not match the... No, I mean, I told you that when, I think in the summer next year, I should be able to get free, and I'll come to your show. I'd love to do your
show. Yeah, we had Corey up by request. Corey still is the only comedian I've had hired that was requested by audience members.
Oh, my
God.
There you go.
Those poor fools.
Go figure.
Right. No, I had a great time.
Yeah, good.
And he made friends with the Willie Sausage people in Frankenmuth.
Willie Sausage.
Did they buy an ad?
We're still working
on
it.
All right, see, I'm getting her sponsors.
Yeah. Well, that's
he comes in the second day and hands me flyers, and he's like, these guys want to sponsor you. I was like, go figure you into the sausage place. I should have known.
I loves my sausage.
Corey, if you...
Much like Kevin Spacey. Thank you. There's a hack joke. Number two.
If you have some artisanal food that was on a blog, Corey will and his wife will stop by.
Yeah.
Well,
I've been to Germany.
Yeah.
And I've been to Europe. And there's, you know, excellent sausage. Mm-hmm. Germany is basically potatoes and sausage is their culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, and there's... Vice versa is this like white sausage that they eat in Germany that is awesome that you can't find anywhere here. And they had that and they had all the knots. Like, so
they have everything in Frankenmuth.
That place is
anything,
legit.
Anything German is there.
Yeah, we bought a bunch of sausage.
For those of you that don't know what Frankenmuth is, and that's where Melissa's from, and that's where she promotes a lot of her shows, is basically a touristy...
It's called Little Bavaria.
It's
right
fake
after
Germany.
Bavaria, Germany.
It is fake Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They are known for their chicken restaurants at Zender's and the Bavarian Inn. And they have a place called...
They have a place called
Bronner's, which is...
largest Christmas store in the world.
And it is Christmas all day. And they spell Christmas with Christ in all capitals, so you don't forget where you are, that you are in God's country.
I'm trying to promote an idea right now because they're trying to find a place to put Manson's body.
Yeah.
I said, I think he should be embalmed and dress him in a full Santa outfit and hide him in Bronner's.
Oh, my goodness.
And nobody will know where he is, and we can be like, where's Manson?
But what if we dipped him in chocolate, though?
Well,
I think that
or
might
put him
maybe,
in the cheese house.
Yeah,
that
because
be fun.
The gig that I did is right next to the cheese.
Oh,
house.
The cheese.
Literally
house.
Next
yes.
door to the
I
cheese.
I know the
chef.
Cheese house. It's a small place. It's Frankenmuth is what, 90 minutes from Detroit, would you say?
About, yeah.
90 minutes, two yeah. hours, depending it on would, what it, part the, of the metro you live in.
When I was taking your class, it took me about an hour and 45 yeah. minutes to get there every time.
That's awesome. So you can go up to Frankenmuth and see
and
some comedy.
Hold on,
which
let's
they
not
didn't.
Undersell it. Directly across the street from the Fudge Kitchen.
The Fudge Kitchen, the cheese house.
Everyone's yeah. coming to my yeah. next show.
Two chicken restaurants. I mean, what more do you
well,
need?
It's like Frankenmuth is this crazy, like, tourist trap.
Yeah, it's a tourist
in
trap.
In the middle of farm country.
It yeah. absolutely is. But, which, you know. Why, that's why it was nerve-wracking to start producing shows, because what the backside of that nobody realizes is there's a ton of old money, and the same families have all mm-hmm. the money, and I'm an outsider looking in saying, hey, we should start putting on comedy shows, and you have to scratch your way in there to yeah. get everyone to accept you.
Well,
so that's why I went right out of the chute with pro shows, yeah. with professional comedians, because I thought, this has got to go good.
Well,
this has
here's,
to go good.
Here's what I see about you. And Corey, you've actually been to the shows. You can back me up on this. I think I'm right. I talk to you enough. We talk all the time about what you're doing and mm-hmm. who you should book and business stuff and I think this is one thing you've done that a lot of small-town promoters, no offense, but small-town, is that you've taken, because when you do comedy in small towns, which is one of the reasons I didn't want to do comedy anymore, because it was all these small towns who aren't sophisticated, and people don't know what they're doing. And they think they know what they're doing, and they have instincts with their bar or with their restaurant or their casino about how a show should go, and they don't know what they're doing, and it makes for shows that aren't comedian-friendly and aren't really great for the audience. And what you've done is you've taken big city shows, comedy castles-type things, and that's your model is Mark mm-hmm. Ridley's Comedy Castle, and what I've taught you in class from my experience, and taking those things to the small towns, and what you're finding, and what according to is that is working mm-hmm. in a way that makes those better shows, makes them better mm-hmm. for you from a business perspective, bringing better comics in, promoting it better, running the show like an actual show yeah. instead of like, hey, stand on these wood pallets in front of the NASCAR hood.
It's true.
You know, and it's working and it's successful and everybody should do
it's
that.
It's very true. There's a way to run comedy, and I think you have learned quickly yeah. about, you know, you have some things that you do that like I haven't had a pre-show meet and greet before.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
oh, you liked it. The some, second night.
I, no, okay. some, sometimes
the second night, you skipped in there like a fairy. Like, are our fans here? Are our fans here?
I'm a professional. Sometimes that'll happen after the show.
Yeah, well.
But I've never seen it done before. Anyway, but that's, we filled the house mm-hmm. and you had lights and sound that worked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
6 out of 10 times you go do comedy. And more, maybe 7 out of 10 times you go and do comedy, and you go to some, you know, if it's not a club or a theater, mm-hmm. and even if it's a theater, that's a 50-50 sometimes, you'll go to some bar, and there's like a moose heads on the wall, and it's chilly night, and, you know, DJ Boober is spinning.
Yeah.
This has all happened at
once.
I'm describing one gig I did, but you know what I mean? Or they don't introduce the. There was a place in Saginaw.
I love that job. Yeah.
There was a theater in Saginaw that was like in a bowling alley, and it had one room that was like a theater
mm-hmm.
in a bowling alley, and it was a really nice venue. And they didn't introduce me.
Yeah.
They were just like, "Here's
you just
the stage."
Had to walk out
I
there.
Just walk out on the stage, and then like they didn't book an MC
or the MC, some guy that. It's like their regular guy that they think is funny that sits at the end of the bar,
right? Or some lady from the crowd will come up and do 10 minutes.
Yeah,
it's
bad,
and it's like it's just chaos. So to have a show done professionally and done right is going to be a huge advantage for you. To you know, going forward, if you learn how to do, because so many people can't. Here's the thing that happens at comedy shows all the goddamn time.
Yeah,
they don't seat people properly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
They'll scatter them around the room.
Well, let me tell you, I cannot take any credit, like zero, because I just want to fill you in on my secret. Yeah. As soon as I did my first show at a bar, it was all my friends. We actually sold tickets. It sold out. I went up there and yammered on for like 50 minutes. I made Joel watch it one time. And he's like, oh, okay, that was nice. But as soon as I booked Fisher Hall and rented the hall and we're going to do this theater show, I got really lucky. My two best friends got on board right away, and they said, we want to help you. What can we do? We want to be a part of this. I said, here's what you can do. Get in my van. We're going to Mark Ridley's, and we're going to go to a show, mm-hmm. but we're going to watch exactly what they do.
Sure, yeah.
And I want our shows to look like his shows. And I now, I have a Joel. I have a Mark. Wow. I do. Yeah. I have a girl. Like, when you come in the door, yeah. your ticket gets scanned. We use Eventbrite.
You have the biggest staff I've ever seen.
Well,
you,
and so I
that's
actually
good
have,
to have a staff.
And
some
now,
people have no staff.
We've grown enough. Like, my sister's on board now. Her whole job is to take care of the comedians. Anything they need, you're responsible. If they need a water, if they need a Coke, if they want purple M&Ms, go find them.
Your mom was
them.
On the staff. I mean, everybody.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
The whole crew.
Well, you
saw a little spat with me and my mom, didn't you?
All of these things. I'm not tooting my own, but I teach this in the comedy class for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think that in comics, if you're listening to this, a lot of comics is a show, promoting your own show is one of the best things that you can do for your comedy career, is promoting not just yourself saying, this is me headlining, I'm Joe Blow, I'm going to go headline the show, but hiring more experienced comics to come in and work your shows, because when those guys see how you run a show, or if they see you as the host and they like you, they're going to be willing. I'm not saying like, it's a quid pro quo where you give somebody money, they give you money. It doesn't work exactly like that. But it's like, if they like you and you put money in their pocket, and Bill Hildebrandt did this for me for years. Joel, let me take you on the road. Let me do this. You know, all these guys,
cool.
Norm Stultz, Derek Richards, all these guys would take me out with them. And, you know, when I started promoting shows, I started hiring Bill and Billy Ray Bauer and Norm and all these guys.
Well,
Mike Bonner.
But that's exactly the worst thing that happens is that guys come in. And they have, you know, 2 years or whatever, or 6 months, and they don't, they think they got it all figured out.
Yeah.
They book only open micers that
they
know.
They book their buddies. It's a mistake.
You know, and this, I mean, it probably applies to just about any job or any kind of career, but you do have to do some apprenticeship. You have to do some.
Well, I can tell you in the mid-level and below scene of comedy, I'm not making any friends.
You're right.
Because I am only booking top professionals in the area, like Michigan and Indiana. I'm really lucky we got Brad Wenzel coming, and we're going to talk about that.
We'll talk about the upcoming shows.
But you don't want
I'm not making any friends for the middle guys and below, because that's my spot in the show.
Okay.
I want to always be the MC, or I want to do...
And you can do that.
You know, but... Here's the thing you say about that's how you get out on the road, which I'm married and I got kids and I can't really go on the road, but I'll tell you, you'd be shocked. I almost never get asked to do shows.
A guy who asked you to do a bunch of shows.
What I'm saying is to get booked in decent shows. Yeah. It doesn't happen very often.
It's coming.
Bill Bushart asked me. He's like,
Bill Bushart. That's who I was going to bring up.
Your emails must be full of people trying to get you in their shows. I'm like, you would be shocked. I'm not. I do. Like, he has got me in a great show. I'm super excited.
It's a thing that happens, and it may not feel like that, but it is a thing that will happen.
Yeah.
It's not a, you know. I mean, look, if you're always busy doing your own shows, it's going to be hard.
Right.
Should get your comedy series to a point where if you're not there.
I'm there.
But I'm saying if you're not there, it should be able to run without you.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe it's a thing where you're... No, but listen to me. In the future, you get it to where you can run it and you go, hey, Melissa's not going to be there for a couple shows.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what you do. This is what you do. Then you build up a demand to see you, and then you're the middle actor, then you're the headliner.
Yeah.
Then you come back. You build up demand to see you. Then when you come back, you do the headline spot.
That's how
it works.
I don't know if I even want to.
But it's a something
I like
for down
listening
the road.
To you guys. I love it. Here's
a little secret. It's not really a secret.
Tell me.
The open mic guys are never going to like you anyway.
Well,
because there's a whole culture of open micers who hang out together, and that's what they do, and they go to other open mics and they hang out.
Yeah.
And they don't do weekend shows, and they don't go on the road. And they're going to be like, well, you're keeping me down. No matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's so
it's always someone else's
you've
fault.
Become a gatekeeper And people don't like gatekeepers. And I, you know, I'm a gatekeeper in my own way at the Comedy Castle, even though I don't book the weekend shows, but I do book the open mic and
influence.
I have some influence.
Yeah.
And people don't like that. You know, I mean, some people do because I've helped a lot of people get booked. You are working at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle next year as a weekend
MC.
And
I cried when I got the email. I was on vacation in Tawas on the beach and my phone went ding. And I was like, an email from Mark Ridley. Opened it up.
There you
this
go.
Weekend available. I'd like to have you MC at the club. And I bawled. Instant female tears.
Oh.
And my mom said, what is wrong with you now? I was like, I'm going to be at the castle.
Good.
Because
see?
You say it in class. Mark has said it to my face. Mm-hmm. It takes 5 to 7 years typically to get into the castle. Mm-hmm. I just had my 2-year anniversary yesterday. Oh, wow. It's so exciting.
It is.
It's super exciting.
And you know, everybody is on a little bit of a different timetable and some people get things earlier than others. But, you know, when you do, when you are a gatekeeper, yeah, there are people that are going to go, well, Melissa doesn't use me on her shows. Why doesn't she use me? Fuck her. I don't like her. Blah,
well,
blah, blah.
Actually,
and that's just normal thing. And I know we talk about this a lot.
Well, she's not even that funny. I hear that.
There are.
I hear that rumor spread around a lot. Well, she's not that
there's
funny.
There's no one that says that guy's everybody. Not that funny. And that's true of everybody.
Well, look, if you want the gold honest truth, though, you're not ready for some rooms. You're not ready for clubs.
You should see me in Ann Arbor. I'll never go back.
What I'm saying is being the house MC for your own shows is a way to get better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to improve.
Right.
So I don't think there's very few people that are just like, Brad Wenzel came into Bill's class when I was helping him out. And we took one look at him and went, well, this kid knows how to write jokes.
Yeah.
Like, and as soon as his balls drop and he starts talking about... like, because Brad was literally like 17 when he came into the class.
Yeah.
But we did go, there's a natural talent. Mm-hmm. But it still took him another 3-4 years to like get to the level where he's now, you know, doing television spots and you know, touring and doing big shows. So no one comes in and just immediately is great off the bat. You're doing it.
Yeah.
What you're doing is you get to watch great headliners that you're booking yourselves. You get to watch all these comics that you bring in, and you're getting experience doing, if you're, you know, hosting your own shows, that's how you build it. So don't expect to just be like, hey, I'm ready to go do Caroline's. It's not that.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm actually, see, that's what I think people misunderstand about me. I don't have a desire. My desire is to promote and grow a comedy company that is known for really great shows. I do not have a burning desire to headline. I love emceeing. Well, Sal D'Amelio invites me to Wyandotte all the time. That's another guy who will offer me jobs.
Friend of the show, Sal D'Amelio.
Sal invites me to Wyandotte. Like, it's a standing offer anytime.
Yeah.
He's been pressuring the heck out of me to feature. And I'm like, Sal, please just let me emcee. I love to emcee. I love to open the show. I love to get everybody riled up. I love to, like, just crank their crank. Okay, that was not
all right, we're going to talk about cranking cranks here shortly.
But and this is the honest, and this
sexual
is,
harassment part two coming shortly.
Of,
to the
that
drawers.
Was my Whoops. That was my favorite Frank Zappa album.
Yes,
sexual harassment part two. I would say
Roger plays it before the show at the Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase.
That's right.
It's inside baseball. But go ahead, Corey.
I like to MC, is what I'm saying.
A lot of people don't, and that's to your advantage to want to MC.
There isn't some backhanded, manipulative thing I'm doing to try to make these big shows so I can be some great headliner before I'm ready. Like, that's not it at all.
Now, I don't want to MC at this point in my life, but once in a while somebody will go, hey, can you come MC such and such because I need a good MC to, you know, hold the show together. And you should feel that's a...
That's not a valuable skill. Yeah, it's not an
too
insult.
Many people try to jump that. They just try to leapfrog.
I don't want
to
be the MC.
So
it's a mistake.
I love it,
Melissa. You're doing a lot of things right,
it.
And we're
I got double booked for next year, the first time ever in February in Frankenmuth. I am not going to be in Frankenmuth, and anybody that's listening, they're gonna be like, "What's the date?" I'm not telling you, but I did call Sal because I was like, this is another great room. I need to get my foot in the door. I need to be there. I want to be there. I want to MC it. But I am having a hard time letting loose of the reins of my own room. I said, Sal, will you MC my room? He's like, I get to be Melissa Hager and break him up.
Okay,
I said,
good.
If you will, he's like, I would love to. Like, I
Sal's
trust
great.
Sal to
Sal's
be awesome. he will be one of the best paid MCs that you will ever hear. Yeah. I'm not asking him to do it for MC money, but
so that and you pay good money. That's another thing.
Well,
and,
you know, and Sal always takes care of you and is a great
guy.
So,
He's wonderful.
There you go.
All right, well, let's talk about who's coming up at the club here, just so people can and where they can find information on your shows. You've got New Year's Eve. You've got two different shows. Where
are
those?
Grill 19 at the Vassar Golf Course.
Okay.
We're going to be doing a show there. Sal D'Amelio and Tom McCarthy are co-headlining.
They've both been on this show.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Very
Sal
excited.
And Tom, two friends of ours.
This is a very unique endeavor for the comedy series. We have the chance to run about 700 people through for New Year's
That's
Eve because
awesome.
We have two different spots.
Yeah, and what's the other one?
And Fisher Hall. We got Matt McClowery and Mike Jeter.
Okay.
And myself. We're going to be at Fisher Hall.
And you know, Matt McClowery, when he started out and Joel was hosting Club Bart as the open mic every Thursday in Ferndale, right up here, right up the street, Matt McClowery went like at the end of the show. Or near the end of the show for like a year and a half.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys.
So there you go.
I mean, Jeff Horst was that guy. Jeff Sheen was that guy.
Well,
kind of the
some of them should still
the
go
guys.
At the end of the show.
No, but those guys were all great, and they're all headlining clubs now, and I'm proud of that. That we kind of took, you know, they learned, you know, on my show how to be funny and worked in front of rough audiences at god-awful times of the night and got good at it. But yeah, Matt's going to be there, and then Brad Wenzel is in
January at Brad
Fisher
Wenzel.
Hall,
yep.
Good. So check out all those shows. All great comics, all friends of ours.
TheComedySeries.net.
TheComedySeries.net for all Melissa Hager promotions, comedy stuff.
And like any company that wants to make it in the world, we have a Facebook page.
Of course.
Because where would we be without Facebook?
As does JoelRadio.net.
Yeah.
And before we go too much farther, and before
my goodness,
as a first time guest here,
in the city, which
dates back to the early days of the
Corinne
Joel Radio
Show. Yeah,
this
goes back to like show three or four.
We present you a toffee fay.
Wow,
the candy that's too good for kids.
You know,
thank you.
I haven't had toffee in so long. The packaging is different now.
I couldn't find it at the gas station. The gas station
this
up the street
looks delicious.
Always has it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and crack one open.
Yeah, have a toffee fay.
Wow.
I don't know. We started talking about toffee fay one day, and it turned into a whole bit.
Well, I made fun of you because it was old man candy.
Right. And then we had...
Do I really get to try this right now?
Yeah, they're delicious.
And then we had fans starting to send
us we used to get toffee fay every Christmas.
We would get... When we had fans. And then...
we have fans.
I'm a fan. I listen all the time.
We would get like Christmas packages and it started getting to be the thing.
Yeah.
Well, at one point we had like 78 pieces of toffee.
Yeah, we had
a
million
like,
toffee.
Because they would send these
so
big
good.
Block ones.
She likes it. Look at it.
This is so good.
Well, enjoy those.
See, there you go. It's
now.
It's the candy.
I never even seen it before.
It's the candy that's too good for kids. That's what they're,
now
they're,
I don't eat.
Literally, that's how they used to sell them.
Well, gosh, Corey, you'll do anything to get hired again.
he's not a.
Is this because my check cleared?
Yes, it is. We give toffee fay to everybody except Ted Moss.
This is so good.
Well, let's open up these. Now, Corey, we've done this before, and as much as I find this a deplorable business move, Oreo keeps putting out different flavors, and I said to Corey, is there a funky
now,
Oreo that you haven't had yet?
I am married to an Oreo fundamentalist.
Ugh.
She refuses.
What does that mean?
She refuses to have any Oreos that aren't just the plain
regular black
Oreo. She bitches about it every time.
Mm-hmm.
Although we did the apple pie ones and she ate a bunch of those.
Okay, so she
had her. I started doing like Facebook Live reviews. Of
okay,
these things,
yeah,
and they blow up. People got nutty for the Oreos. They're always thank you. So this is the hot cocoa Oreo.
These are hot cocoa Oreos. I picked these up yesterday. My immediate complaint is that it's a way smaller package than a traditional Oreo for the same price.
Well,
so I don't know. I mean, I think maybe
I think the specialty ones come in the small.
They do, yeah.
Now,
which is it seems like a jip.
The specialty Oreos have ranged from makes like peanut butter is now like a regular flavor.
Mm-hmm. The chocolate
makes
the,
it mint,
yeah.
whatever things right. that go well with chocolate. Mm-hmm. These are all fine. Lemon Oreos.
Yeah.
I'm even okay with.
Well, I think birthday cake you can get all the time now.
Yeah, but then there's like atrocities like Swedish Fish,
which
was a crime against and nature.
Again, I always think this is all just a gimmick to sell more regular Oreos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because you go, I haven't had an Oreo in 20 years, but I'll try this fancy one.
Mm-hmm.
So now these have black and white.
They're two-tone. So I think there's a cocoa and like a marshmallow component to this.
Is the filling thicker? It feels thicker.
I don't know.
It feels like
I think the
thicker.
White is just regular Oreo.
Okay.
Well,
I'm not really getting anything other than Oreo on this.
Well, the cocoa is pretty subtle.
Yeah. And I don't really know what that would entail that would be different.
I mean, you already have chocolate in the cookie part.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, you did it again, Nabisco. You fooled me.
Well, I mean, look, this is
I do. I think it tastes different. I'm fantasizing different? About sledding in my mittens right now.
Well,
look, I feel it.
This is a fine cookie. I just don't know that it's that different from a regular Oreo.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, certainly, it's not like.
Oh.
Like I said, it's not like, you know. Slim Jim flavored or something. It's not like, you know, it's not like guacamole Oreos.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been the review of these, right? Well, I had those ones that popped in your mouth. Well, I forgot what those were called.
Oh, the ones with the pop.
The firework Oreos. Those I kind of enjoyed.
Wow.
Even though, again, the flavor wasn't a whole lot different, but then
well,
your mouth.
I don't struggle. Think the Pop Rock was strong enough on those.
Ah.
Well, you fooled us again, Nabisco. You did it. There's nothing wrong with this. But it's not distinctly different enough, I think, too.
Yeah, I mean.
There's a little cocoa. Yeah, you're right. There's a little cocoa.
I can taste it definitely different. I think I could downhill ski
if
right
I
now.
Said, what is this flavor?
I'm picturing Melissa on a horse. Dietrich Fur. Well, by the Dietrich family.
If I gave you this Oreo and didn't tell you what it is, how many guesses would it take for you to go? This is hot.
Oh, we should have had these blindfolded. Well, is what you're saying? All right.
Well, what about a better thing to do?
Well, you know.
What can I tell you?
Yeah, two all guys right. And a girl blindfolded feeding each other Oreos. So,
I would say
I think Al Franken did that.
Yeah, I think, the cops will be here any minute now.
All right. Jesus. Well, let's talk about some more, you know, because Melissa, you also did 9:10 a.m. with me where I'm on every Tuesday.
Yes, I love
Mike
radio.
Which and you were funny kind of, on there.
Was I?
I took you to the all-black radio station, where I'm normally the only white guy.
Yeah.
And I brought you in there.
I'm a heavy-set country girl, though.
Yeah. And,
so I'm a hit in that community.
Yeah, and I, well, that was a thing. It was like,
I am.
How is she going to do with this thing?
And oh, you're going to do real well.
Well, I thought Bonner, you know, Mike Bonner himself seemed, you know, like he had seen you. You had introduced him at an open mic at the Comedy Castle. And he was very nice, but, you know, listen, I'll be honest with you. Mike Bonner, all you got to do is come up to Mike Bonner and shake his hand, and you're invited on a radio show.
Aww,
it's not a big, it ain't a big, so... no, but listen, I'm getting,
I had to
get,
do way me, more than that to get on this
let
one.
Let me finish, yeah, I believe me, I tell people no all the time, or I tell people yes and then never invite
I've
them, but here's the thing.
I've been asking for a year!
You have been.
No.
But Mike is very good about allowing people on. But he also, I've seen him throw guys out of there one segment.
But would you say that I made an impression?
Well, that's what I mean. You came on, and it was thunder. It was wall-to-wall laugh.
Was it?
You were cracking up Mike. You were cracking up everyone else that was in the studio. I forget who was all there that night. But it was
a full room.
It was a full room of people who didn't know who you were. And
not
you went in there, and you were killing it. Aww. And Mike said to you after, he goes, you can come back anytime, which is not something he says to everybody. So that was, I think you were a big hit on there.
Wow.
And you were talking about, you know.
I'm so glad you told me that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a little secret
think,
that you know, a lot of people don't know.
The icebreaker was when I told him I didn't meet a black person until I was
18
years old.
Explain that to my audience.
Wow.
Explain that. How does that, you tell us where you grew up. How come it takes you till 18 to meet a black person?
Well, now in my defense, I went to high school with a girl who was half and half. Her dad was black. Actually, I don't even think her dad was all black, and her mom was white. So she was, like, beautiful. You know, she had that great skin, and we would joke that she was our black friend, and she loved it. But I met a real dark chocolate, creamy skin black person for the first time outside of Claire's in the Saginaw Mall when I was 18 years old. And he said, hey, mommy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he wants to be my friend. I'm going to go talk to that guy.
Yeah.
And then I ended up going for a joyride.
So you get in this guy's car.
Yeah, well, they said, hey, we're just going to go ride around. You want to just go ride around with us? I said, I didn't see
and
no harm in
that. That seemed like a good idea.
I grew up in a little small town. We joyride all the time.
Now, wait, you say small town, you mean Pumpkin Patch.
I grew up in a very small town with one blinking light, and it's just a very small town.
And you showed this guy your blinking eye on the
I walked by, and he said hi, and I... You know, because actually country boys, believe it or not, country yeah. boys are not very friendly.
No.
They're not overly.
No, I can believe that.
They don't catcall. They don't. And I didn't really know what catcalling was. I didn't understand any of that. I was a young kid. I moved out. I was on my own. And I might have even just given blood that day for my $20 that I needed. And I had a rough start.
Okay.
I had a rough start. So we go for a joyride. I don't mean this in any other way besides exactly how it sounds. He looked like Snoop. And he had a white friend who looked like Eminem. I swear to God. So in the front seat, it was Snoop and Eminem. Yeah. And we're driving around Saginaw. And all of a sudden, he just laid down the gas pedal. And we're going right through Saginaw at like 85 miles an hour. And I said, "What are you doing?" And then I saw the lights. There was a cop behind us with lights on. And now I was 18 and there was a case of beer in the back seat, but it wasn't open. It wasn't open. I said, "The beer isn't open. You're not going to get in trouble. I understand I'm underage." He's like, No, you don't understand." And they go flying. Then
I understand. He had warrants.
Yeah, we get surrounded. I watched.
I know exactly
what
happened.
I didn't know.
It's funny. He had warrants and you listened to warrants.
Well, so it might have been the case.
Oh,
so
I
what happens? The cops pull you over?
The cops got us cornered into a tire place. The door. They get out and they start running. They both got tased. I'm just sitting there. They got laid out on the parking lot. And I'm sitting there like, these are my new friends. I can't believe I think I didn't know them as well as I think I should have.
This might not seem pertinent, but what where was he hanging out in the mall? Was it
in front of Claire's? But
in front of Claire's.
I was.
You know what Claire's is, Corey?
I was going to
it's
Claire's.
An accessory store.
I don't know.
What was he at? Chess King? Was he at?
I was
the
so.
Food court?
I was so
he?
Broke. I
Lids.
Would go to the mall
Lids.
Just to walk around for something to do. That's all I
the
would.
The weirdest
do.
Part is he was
Foot Locker.
He was hanging outside the Yankee Candle Company, which seemed really.
Well,
strange.
He knows where the white girls hang out. They hang out at Claire's. But I mean, it might have looked like these guys were kidnapping you, and somebody called the cops.
Well, here's
is
what
that,
happened.
That,
this
is
what's
what
crazy.
Happened?
So I stayed in the back seat. I watched this go down. The cops come to the car. It's like dusky, so it's starting to get dark. I have a pink fleece jacket on with like little furry balls where the hood.
Yeah.
I have my hair.
They were trying to put their furry balls on you.
I have my hair in pigtails. I'm not even making this up. I have my hair in pigtails.
My God. How old were you?
And the police, 18, the police come shine their light in. And they're like, "Ma'am, come out." I get out of the car. I'm shaking. I turn around. I see them pulling knives and guns out of the car.
Wow.
The part that I forgot is I told them I didn't have a jacket and it was cold out. So I actually had them stop at my house.
Okay.
So I could grab a jacket. Like that happened earlier. So they popped the trunk. Some of my stuff was in their trunk.
So they robbed
you. They had
you,
robbed me while I was in my room getting my jacket.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
So, but this is what I didn't. I was just so surprised. And then the cop. He thought I was a prostitute. He thought that I said, "No, I just met them at the mall. They're just my new friends." And then I had to hand over my license. My license still said Millington, Michigan, which out there everyone knows is a little two truck town.
But you were living in Saginaw.
And they said, "Yeah." And they said, "Why are you here?
Yeah.
What is happening?" And I said, "I met them at the mall. They asked me to go for a ride."
So wow.
So the cops took me to my trailer that I bought in Saginaw. And he said, "If I ever see you out here again, don't trust anybody."
Exactly.
But I still do all the time. I'm sitting here with you guys. What's going to happen?
I mean,
no, I'm just kidding.
No.
I was 18 years old. I would say my first impression of a black person maybe didn't go as smoothly as I had hoped.
All right.
But I have grown to enjoy them very much.
Wow.
I'm very jealous of their skin. I think it's amazing.
All right, before we go too far down this path, I have many black friends, Jeff Horst being one of them. And
I love Jeff. He's wonderful.
You know what? Actually, honestly, I grew up part of my childhood in Cincinnati, and I will say that it was like when I moved here, it was markedly, you know what I mean? It was suddenly like I moved here, and it was a totally different neighborhood with all kinds of different people. Which it was not. And, you know, we had the Gonzalez's. That was the family.
Yeah.
That was the one Mexican family on the street in Cincinnati. And that was about it. It was as lily white as it got where I grew up, you know, at least in my early elementary school years. But, like, it's a different world. We go out and do these shows in the middle of nowhere. And it's a different world.
It is not diverse. Yeah, it is. It is, and that is a thing that.
But here's the hard part about this. So, like, especially down here, and especially when I'm at Ridley's, and even just hanging out down here, you know, people will talk about small town people like they're racist and they sit on their porch with guns and they all this stuff.
All now, the true stuff.
I know that. But here's the thing. I'm very naive to, it's not me being racist. It's me just not knowing. I just don't know.
Yeah,
and that's what I feel like sometimes city people get numb to is not realizing we just don't know. We're not exposed to the same things.
One of the weird things about racism is that a lot of times people that are not exposed to other people who have no reason get these prejudices. And you know what I mean? It's like we went to a funeral in like Tecumseh recently.
Tecumseh, Michigan.
Yes. Which for Tecumseh, whatever you want to say.
It's an hour or something outside.
It's farm country and it's like a little southwest of Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. It's really only like 30 minutes away from Ann Arbor, but it feels like you're in the middle, you know, like literally. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in a room full of the palest people outside of like a Paul Anka concert. And like, I just looked around in this room and I went, the last thing on these people's minds is like any other, you know, sometimes it's just that it's a bubble.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, and you could go to a, you could go to a barbershop on Six Mile. And there won't be a white people anywhere nearby. Mm-hmm. So people get in these little bubbles, and it's sometimes, you're 18. We might go, wow, that's insane. But guess what? That happens in places. And I don't think there's intentionally, a lot of times it's not even intentional malice. Mm-hmm. It's just that all you see around you are white people.
Yeah.
Or you see around you are black, whatever
community
you're in.
Well, and obviously my parents weren't racist because they never said, oh, by the way, when you move out, if a black guy ever talks to you, don't go talk to them. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's the stuff. That's what I'm saying. It's not everybody even realizes.
Well, the thing about race is when you are around people.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be, you know, like the forced integration of the 60s, people didn't like because of the forced element. But when you are around people in a work situation, stand-up comedy is great because it's diverse, you know. Or when I do 9-10, when you're around those people and they're good people, you know, you can't make any kind of blanket statement about all black people are this or all gay people are this. If you're around a black guy who's nice to you, And you can't go, okay, they're all like this, they're all like
although
that.
Although, actually, you can, the more exposed you are to different cultures, begin to sort of make...
In a negative sense. I mean, there
also,
are stereotypes for a reason, but...
That also becomes a problem when people go, there's a worry that you're going to be stereotyping.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you point out something like, I'm going to throw this out, black people don't ski.
Okay, well,
and I challenge any call in now to.
Well, no, I'm not.
Do we lose the hotline number?
The hotline somewhere,
610-552. What is the
0746? 0746. But listen, here's my point: is that you don't like black people, but you're around them and they're nice to you, how, as a human being, can you make any sort of blame that they're all bad when you are interacting with
you can't.
In a wonderful, fine, kind way? And it doesn't mean that you, as a minority, if you're a white person in a black neighborhood or black setting, you will have people that are going to be racist. And black people, when they go to the country, do experience racism.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it does not mean that because a black guy at a Cracker Barrel is hated by every single person in that Cracker Barrel.
Right.
Some of those people might, but generally speaking, it's to overcome racism, you have to have that experience of hanging out with those people and dealing with them. And when you do that, it becomes much easier to just be open minded.
We just had a mayoral election in Detroit, and the candidate that was running against Mike Duggan played to the back of the room, played to. He was talking about let's take back the motherland, and he was playing. He was
playing the race card,
basically race baiting, as far as you can see. And that had a receptive audience. But to me, I look and I go, and there's people that are very upset that the new Detroit is gentrifying and it's going to push people out. But I don't think a 80% black city is any more healthy than an 80% white city.
Yeah,
I don't think. You know what I mean? When people get on top and go, well, Livonia is all white people and it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't think that a lack of diversity Either way,
no, he's good.
He's good in any circumstance because that's what it does. It creates bubbles.
Well, where I grew up, handful of black people at my high school. You know, we had 2,000 students and probably, you know, up.
Oh my gosh, how many people did you graduate with?
Well, there were 500 in each class.
Oh my, that's so more than my
years,
entire high
and
school.
So, you know, I mean, you were talking about, you know, one-tenth of 1% of black students. And so we didn't have a lot of, you know, we didn't interact a lot with black people. But when I started working, I'd work at the movie theater. Mm-hmm. Lots of black people working with me. Not, you know, but, you know, out of a staff of 30, we'd have four or five black guys. When I went to manage a movie theater in a more of a mixed neighborhood at 12 and over there, 12 and DeQuinder, our staff was probably 80% black. And I was in charge of hiring some of those people and dealing with them. And had all kinds of made all kinds of great friends over there. Made out with my first black woman working at that movie theater.
Aww. Let's all we've all shared our I have a black friend.
No,
friend.
I listen.
We
I
don't sound racist at all up in here.
I don't see the bad. I always try to see the good in everybody. It's like all I was saying is it's a matter of exposure. If you're not exposed to, then how are you supposed to know? Girl on her wedding night is far different than a girl, you know, 6 years down the road in marriage not every waits for marriage, but whatever.
When we did move back up here halfway through like third grade, the three people that were nice to me were Dave Ashley, Rebecca Yulinoff, and Akima Richardson.
Okay.
So it was like a Jew, a black, it was like a sketch. It was like a Jew,
a black guy, and a Chinese guy walk into a bar.
Yeah, it was like a comedy routine.
Oh my!
There was
one parachute.
It was a rabbi, a sailor. It was a villagey people kind of situation. But but you know, it does change your experience.
Yeah,
absolutely. And those became my friends immediately.
And I've dated black women now. I've done that and all that stuff.
Well,
hold on.
Give Joel.
Well, no, come on.
Joel wants credit. All right.
But I'm just saying.
No. If we're going to go into online dating stories, I got a whole bunch of them.
I am not racist. My penis is, though.
So. All right. Corey has not experienced deal.
I have not. But, and it's too late now. But
is it? Is it?
Well.
If his wife would allow it.
Parts of me have color.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just kidding.
You've been with the black guy, then? Is that what you're
saying?
I have.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
it was
you.
In the mall in Sag.
Yeah, exactly. In the back seat of a hoopty.
Thank you.
Oh,
and that
oh it was in the hoopty. Yeah. Right.
And even that's not all they always say it's supposed to be.
Well,
so.
it's. I'm oh glad my. That
some
I'm,
are, some
I'm
aren't.
Glad that you have some found are. Some worldliness,
yeah.
But yet you still have the small-town charm.
Right.
And don't lose that. Because
oh,
part of your character.
Oh, you're going to lose it real quick in
well,
comedy.
Well, that's her persona, though.
I like being a little naive to everything.
Yeah, and that's funny about you. That is a thing about you that is funny, is that you are, you know, you're a little bit of a hick. You're a little bit of a rube. but that makes you different than...
Have you ever told Corey my joke you told me to ditch? That's such a hit.
Well, you explain it. See
I don't
Corey
think that.
It.
Hold on. I don't think it's fair of Joel to say that. I think you're a bumpkin. I think. That's
okay.
Really,
well, that's a fun other word.
That's really the way
is
to
that
say
another
it.
Synonym. One? That's a all better right. one.
What's your joke? Go ahead.
No, I. You know, at the end of class, you go up and you get that experience of saying some of your material and getting feedback. And I was the only girl in my class and the only one from outside of the city. So my jokes were not usually a very big hit at that time. And I thought, why am I even still doing comedy? This was such a hit up there. Why down here do these guys not get this? And I had a joke talking. I talk about how I like full brief underwear. You've heard that.
Yes.
That I do not like to. I don't get into the thong culture. And I say how it would be funny.
The thong culture. Are there meetings?
Is yeah. This,
I think so. Yeah. I think so. But I said about how if my husband did the laundry and I was a thong wearer and he pulled a thong of mine out of the dryer, he'd be like, "Ah, honey, why'd you wash my ratchet straps?"
Right, exactly.
And Joel's like, "Yeah, you need to get rid of that. Nobody knows what a ratchet
my
strap is."
My feeling is that people in the city where we're at, Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle, may not know what a ratchet strap is. Well, and if they don't get the reference, they can't laugh at it. Corey knows. Corey's a smart guy.
Yeah, yeah. You strap down stuff.
Yeah.
But you...
They're long. Yeah. They're really, it's funny.
Yeah, it is. But the problem is, I don't go up and do my Hanukkah material.
Yeah.
Ross Common.
Right.
Even though, you know, I grew up with most of my friends are Jewish growing up, at least half. And I didn't do a number crunch, whatever. But a good percentage of my good friends are Jewish. And so,
ask them. They're the accountants. There you go.
Zing. But, you know, our former attorney, Nigel Rosenblum.
Being
one of them. But,
show attorney.
I know that I can't do some of that stuff. You know,
right.
you have to adjust where you're at.
Right.
Yeah.
New York and
Chicago comics come into town all the time and go, oh, shit, it's the Midwest. It's, this doesn't work.
Well, guys do New York subway jokes, and they don't work at Mark Ridley's Comedy Cast because we don't have a subway.
Like, MCs and stuff and guys that I'm not trying to slam anybody because I love these guys, but they'll go Saturday night. The MC went up and did a bunch of, like, you know, how soon do you give a girl your Netflix password?
Yeah.
You're committed to the relationship and, you know, Bumble jokes and Tinder and stuff. And people with mortgages are not going to respond to that material.
You can be too young. You can be too old. You can be too country. You can
understand, but
you got to learn
how to be a better country comedian. I wasn't aspiring to headline the castle
every weekend. Well, you're doing well with that.
You are doing well, so.
And they all know what a ratchet strap is.
Well,
own one.
Yeah, she gifted me a ratchet strap at the end of class.
I will say this, the aforementioned Jeff Horst.
Yeah.
He won't mind this because, you know, he's my friend.
Yeah.
I've seen him do, Jeff grew up in Southfield. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of does a lot of urban rooms. In fact, he's doing a show. He just advertised a show with Clipper Man.
Yes.
it's Clipper Man, Tattoo Man, and Jeff Horst.
Yeah.
That's the show.
And White Man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Jeff Horst.
Yeah, Jeff Horst is White Man.
Well, I know Clipper Man. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I like Clipper Man.
But I'm like, oh.
He cuts hair.
Yeah.
Clipper Man.
Yeah, I know Clipper Man, too. But it's just like, Jeff, I will see him do those kind of shows.
Yeah.
And then I'll go, I'm like, oh, I know he's doing his white people set because he's doing hunting material. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Jeff can adjust and all comics
can adjust.
Yes, his hunting joke killed.
In Frankenmuth, he does the hunting material.
And the hunting joke killed, and it inspired me because my husband's a huge hunter to have my own hunting material. And now that's that three-legged deer is what I'm known for.
Honestly,
up
you
there.
Know. But the other thing is, you write all these jokes, and in Frankenmuth, I made some offhand. You know, sometimes you just make a little reference to something.
Mm-hmm.
I threw a Clio joke in there, and they blew up.
Yeah.
It was, you know,
local references are always good.
Which
but
is
you
like,
know, you gotta,
by the way, you can insert the name, and most times, headliners will come up to you and go, "What's the town?
Mm-hmm.
Where the rednecks live?" Yeah.
Oh yeah.
In Detroit, it's Taylor.
Yeah.
In Flint, it's Burton. You know, I don't know where it is in Frankenmuth.
And if you're in Frankenmuth, you can dump on Montrose and Clio.
Yeah, sure.
Or Millington and Vassar.
Sure, there you go. Because, you know, everybody thinks their shit doesn't stink. And the next town over is where the hillbillies live.
Right.
You know. Little
I'm learning.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's a people, comics will come in and go, where's the strip club? Where do the gay people live? You know, what's the name of a shitty hotel? What's the name of, you know, like they want these things.
Yeah,
and then you insert them into your joke, you know, and it changes from town to town. That makes more work. But my advice was, you know, let's have an act that will work
everywhere
so you don't have to make a million changes when you walk in.
That is the problem, though, because you can get calcified into, like, doing...
So what's the city version of a ratchet strap?
Oh.
What makes that joke work in the city? Because it's still a good reference.
It's got to be a specific cultural reference to something that... I've got a bit about, in Detroit, I have a bit about when it starts snowing, you know, it's serious because they put the black guy in the parka on 696.
Yeah.
Which is, it does. There's like, for years and years, there was this reporter that they would put out every time it snowed, you'd have to watch the poor man shiver out there on the freeway. But that's like a very specific reference to here.
Right, right.
So I think what you're doing is it's a cultural.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you make a...
Yeah, I mean, Corey is going to do that joke, and he's going to be in a town where they don't have the black guy on the freeway.
Which I don't do the
and
joke
And he wouldn't do the
town.
Joke, yeah, so you got to know.
You know.
But, you know, at the same time, as a young comic, you know, when people are going, hey, I need you to do 25 minutes, and you go, well, man, I just lost my black guy on the overpass
joke. When you don't
now
have
you got
the
24
time.
Minutes,
right.
and
right.
you're going, what do I do now, you
right.
know?
And over years, you will develop enough material that you can fill the time.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, if you only got 18 minutes, and they're like, well, four of that won't work, you're in trouble.
So anyway, let's speaking of country people, this happened in the news, and there's an uproar about this. I don't know if I agree with this uproar, maybe on a different way that other people do. I think there are some psychological things happening with this, with the outrage, the internet outrage of the day, of the week. In fact, this is such a... The internet outrage goes away so quickly that by the time this show is actually put up on JewelRadio.net, will be moved on to the next outrage. But People Magazine named Blake Shelton...
Now, can we pull up a song of his?
World's Sexiest Man. I respect my audience too much to play a Blake Shelton song. If you don't know who Blake Shelton is, he's a country singer.
You have listeners that don't know who
Blake
Shelton is?
Well, I'm explaining as far as I know.
Oh my gosh, I'm wetting my drawers.
A lot of people know.
We have German fans.
A lot of people know him as a judge on The Voice. Oh. So maybe they're not country fans, but they know him from that show. He dates Gwen Stefani. He was married to a country singer named Miranda Lambert. Am I right about that? And people are upset that he is named World's Sexiest Man. Now, I'm trying to figure out why is there outrage. And here's my take.
Yeah.
It seems like...
There's always outrage.
Well, right. It seems like there are people who sort of like... They sort of look at him as sort of the George W. Bush of people. And there are sophisticates. There are people who are maybe more city folk who look at that and go, what's handsome about him? Now, first of all, to me... My only thing is from a purely looks are subjective, but on a purely aesthetic level, Blake Shelton looks like a guy who's hungover all the time. He looks like he had six beers the night before and put his truck into a ditch, and his eyes are bloodshot, and he looks a little puffy, like maybe he did too much cocaine. I don't know. I'm not saying Blake Shelton does cocaine, but he's kind of unshaven. He's not class. If you say it's Jude Law, you say it's Hugh Jackman, I go, this is movie star, matinee idol good looks. Blake Shelton doesn't have that. But I don't feel like that's why people are outraged. I think people are outraged because it is a class thing, and that it is sort of white liberals who don't want a red state sex symbol being the sexiest man alive.
Well,
am I right?
He's a shit kicking corn pone hayseed.
Yeah.
So it doesn't appeal to me. But I would thought that we should ask the opinion of
a woman who didn't
meet an African American until she was 18.
Who's
a legitimate bumpkin right here. You can tell me.
Give it up.
What do you think about Blake?
Yeehaw! Who has met Blake in person?
Met Blake? Oh, really?
No, who has? I'm saying.
Oh, I don't
room,
know. Nobody.
Nobody.
Okay.
So I would say, and this is always my argument, and me and Joel don't even agree on this. I would say personality has everything to do with everything, and I have heard from several people that he is one of the nicest people you could ever meet.
Okay.
And I think that takes you far in show business
when you're not a
diva and you're easy to work with.
Yeah.
And they say, what do you want in your green room? Ah, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
That goes far. And I think when you're at the level he's at and you work with as many people as he's worked with, that reputation spreads. Him and Miranda went through a big thing. I know huge Miranda Lambert fans that will go front row anytime she's within three states.
Okay.
They will be there. And when that all went down, even they were like, oh, that's too bad because he was so nice. He was such a great guy.
Yeah.
Miranda talks about him on her fan page.
Okay.
You know, just I think personality wins every time. Every time.
So I don't think you get the cover of People Magazine being a nice guy. Now, look. I believe the People Magazine Sexiest Man Alive is a lot of stuff done.
What about Alan Alda?
Okay.
If he was nice to the right person with the right influence, I do think
my guess
that.
Is that there's a new season of The Voice coming out. I believe that probably the producers, his agents, his managers kind of lobbied for that. I think there's some back channel stuff. I don't think people are going aesthetically, Blake Shelton's the sexiest man alive. He might sell magazines to a certain demographic, but you find him attractive enough that he is the sexiest man alive. You
I
fine with
take
that.
Him out of bed for
you're
eating crackers.
Fine
there
with
you
that.
Go. All right.
Interesting.
That's and okay. We're getting
okay.
I have a good friend that was a finalist.
He's got pretty eyes
on The Voice.
Okay.
My friend Joshua Davis, who I grew up with, was top three. I think he finished third.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with Blake and with Adam. And he said Blake was super cool.
Okay.
He's a good guy.
But
so I can back that story up to some degree. But
my feeling is, I don't care who the sexiest
man is. Didn't say that about Adam.
No, but
he said that about Blake.
But I mean, my feeling is, who even cares who the sexiest man
alive
is?
Well, everybody. But here's the thing, you're talking about the
uproar. Why are people mad? Why are people mad, Corey? Tell us, somebody.
Everybody uproars. Well, they're always going to uproar, especially now when it's easier than ever to uproar.
Yeah.
You can't make everybody happy.
He made some Twitter jokes about gay people and stuff that from the past people dug up.
There's a problem currently in the left. And you know, the right is also doing this. There's purity testing.
Yeah.
There's purity testing. The right-wing version of it is the Tea Party.
Okay.
And they're sort of, they have their fire and fury about, you know, shutting down the government and all government activity is evil in the swamp. And the left wing has these, like, social justice purity tests.
Yes.
In which any opinion that isn't specifically, like, out of six blocks of Manhattan...
Yeah.
On the Upper East Side are trash. And so Blake Shelton made gay jokes on, and they weren't terribly sophisticated or whatever, and they're bad jokes.
They were in poor taste, yeah, absolutely.
And he made those jokes on Twitter. And I went, he's from fucking Tennessee.
Yeah.
What exactly is, you see, but again, I think it's people that don't go. We go to these towns.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I go and meet people in the country
They don't know what
I'm
out
doing.
There.
But
catering
let me ask
to
you
an
this.
Audience.
Wouldn't the sexiest man, and maybe he's been this before, but wouldn't the left be like, well, John Hamm is fine to be sexiest man alive? My feeling is there would be no outrage even from the right about that. That is only the left that is upset.
I hate to
the right outrages less.
I hate to break this to you.
Maybe.
I hate to break this to you, but perhaps the most fragile, brittle people on the planet Earth are like Jezebel bloggers.
Yeah, I think so.
So, like, I think there's this, like, cadre of New York blog posters that
intellectual feminists
that have to be not even intellectual. They're like,
well, pseudo intellectuals.
Like culture. They're like pop culture critics now.
Yeah,
like that just live to shit on people. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
but
I personally, my feeling, Blake Shelton is, I don't give a shit.
Okay,
I don't like his music.
He doesn't seem like a
bad dude.
Is the concept, nice, but shouldn't. If there's an outrage, what I wouldn't be surprised and what I wouldn't be upset about is even having the term sexiest man alive in a magazine cover. Isn't that in its own way sexist and backwards in a way that should really be upsetting people more than who is that guy?
No, but that would involve women having to think that they have sexist thoughts.
Well,
well
that's what I mean.
Or women,
seems completely sexist.
Women would have to imagine that. I think there's this current movement that's going on.
Yeah.
It's only men.
In which... men are awful and horrible, so women can do whatever they want in terms of...
That's true.
I just had a ladies' night, ladies only, Friday,
and
I saw some women do some things
bad behavior
that are way worse than anything you're hearing on the TV now.
Yeah, I haven't been to a bachelorette party, but I got I got ideas.
And shouldn't the other outrage about sexiest
man alive? And they just take
alive?
It. They just take it. They don't even ask. They just take it.
Well, the difficulty here about this whole sexual harassment situation is no guy has ever felt ambivalent about sex afterwards.
Right.
They might not like the girl. They might go, I might not call her again or whatever. But the actual sex itself.
Can you tell me what that word means?
They never feel bummed out about having sex.
Yeah.
They're
gotcha.
Never like, no guy ever goes, well, you know, I shouldn't have gotten my nut off.
Yeah.
But women will have a volcano,
feelings.
A torrent of
feelings
where they're like, geez, what did I do? I shouldn't have done. Was I too slutty? Was he nice?
I mean,
did I like him? And guys will just go, well, the sex was accomplished.
Next.
And they might, you know what I mean? They might go, that girl's nuts. I don't like her.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right.
They might have
feelings
about the girl, but not the act.
Okay.
And that is causing a gigantic disruption in terms of like how people perceive stuff.
Well, I wanted Melissa here, too, because I knew we'd talk about this, and I think it's good to have a female voice. I don't believe that Melissa... I know from a little bit before
what
the show.
What she's telling us is Blake Shelton can get it.
Well, but so I think Melissa
I think
Melissa is not a Jezebel blogger, and I think her attitude towards some of these things might be a little different than a lot of the outrage. But I think there are... Okay, let's talk about the... We did this last time. I'm not going to belabor the point because we talked about it. Who do you want to talk about first, Corey? Charlie? Because one thing, and I think this came up a little bit, I think we talked about this a little bit, and I think even for you, and when I was discussing that show, when people would listen, I said, you know, I wished in a way that Corey wasn't as dismissive of some of these things, and not that you were dismissive, because I think you're outraged. I think you are outraged on an appropriate level, but I don't want it
or
to come off.
Or he's just really married, wishing someone to come after him.
Well, I think you know,
just
but
one
at the
time.
Same time,
just
like
one
the stuff
time.
That came out this week, okay. What Al Franken is accused of doing, or women are accusing him of doing, is nowhere, you know, what Harvey Weinstein, we basically know, again, he hasn't been tried in a court of law, but what somebody like Harvey Weinstein did, or Kevin Spacey did, is way beyond what Al Franken is being accused of doing. And I don't think that you can have this moral equivalency there.
People are
refusing, people are doing that.
People are refusing to accept that there's degrees.
Yes.
People don't think
that
there
are... And that was sort of your point last week.
Yeah, and I've been fighting everybody online because that's what I do all day. Is
yeah, that's...
I get in Twitter.
How's that working out for you?
Oh, my gosh.
I just get in
How
Facebook and Twitter wars because that's just my personality.
I don't like confrontation.
I love it. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, Corey lives.
I can't wait.
I'm a submissive.
Oh, well, I mean, well, we're learning a lot.
Let me give you Charlie Rose's phone number, and apparently that's what he likes.
Maybe Louie would like to take you out on the... Okay, we talked about Louie last week, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Louie right. broke while we were doing the show. Right. That story literally came out. Right. We were in the middle of the show.
Okay, as much as I like Louis C.K.'s work, I'm you know, I wasn't like ever a super fan. Some of these guys are like, he walks 6 feet above the water.
God among men.
I think Louis was a top tier comedian, and I liked his work a lot, and I liked the show Louis. But I couldn't wrap my head around that particular, like, that's not fun for you. If a guy's like, let me jerk off in front of you, is that fun?
I have yet to hear about any of the girls being tied down to a chair and forced to watch. I have yet hear about them being...
That's where some of this gets tricky, you know?
And this is just me. This is just...
But you wouldn't want that to... like.
No, I totally
Joel,
agree.
Put your pants back on.
Exactly.
If we just whipped our wangs out right here,
both of us. I would leave the room.
Yeah.
I would leave the room, but I wouldn't... try to destroy either of you
if you came
after me for something, I'd be like, wait, hold on a minute.
The big mess of all this is that we then have to evaluate how everyone feels about things.
Well, and that's
and
the
then
thing,
each
that...
so it's like every case is different, every allegation is different,
everybody,
and the people who make the allegations all
and
have different
responses. Everybody has different emotional baggage to live with. That is not our... we cannot decide what is his emotional problems and what degree we think they should be at any level. Yeah. So like, I'm an overweight female. It is very obvious that I overeat because I show it. It's on my body. You can see it. It's not like you look at me and say, boy, I wish you'd eat a cheeseburger.
And all we've done today is give you cookies and candy.
But what I'm saying is like you see him, you see his show, you meet him at a meet and greet. It doesn't show on him like, wow, he's got some emotional problems and he's going to whip his penis out at any time.
But first of all, his act never surprised me. I always thought Louis was kind of a dirtbag, but his art never... that never made me look at his art. I can separate the man from the art.
In the case of...
and his art is good.
In the case of Al Franken.
Yeah.
Which is the one that I have kind of... I smell the setup.
Yeah.
Because the woman who accused him is a Hannity panelist, a regular Fox News contributor. Mm-hmm. She went on a USO tour as the bimbo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was her role, because that's what...
that
the
was her character.
Since,
yeah,
like, you know, Rita Hayworth used to come out with, hey, Bob Hope, hey, give it up for that Lana Turner. You know, whatever. Or whoever.
And Bob Hope banged all those chicks, by the way.
Right,
you know,
sure.
I mean, that's
you
the
know,
legend.
Betty
anyway.
Grable, she's got some pegs on her. Look at that.
Yeah.
And they were always doing that.
Well, I wish they could see your face.
How about
that
Melissa Hager?
Yeah.
I gotta tell you.
But that's been the USO shtick, is that you bring a pretty girl out, and she does some flirty, suggestive stuff.
How about
stuff.
That Melissa Hager, boy?
You know, these are the worst Bob Hope impressions.
Hey, I wouldn't mind visiting her hills. Mama. My Bob Hope. That's a humdinger. I don't even know. I'm just doing old radio guy voice now. I'm not even doing Bob Hope. Hey, when Bob Hope died.
Hey, this is Bob Franken, move stuff and hope. Remember when Wait, Bob, let me show you my sausage.
When Bob Hope died, I hosted Club Bart as Bob Hope. Because I think you gave me a golf club and a sailor's cap. And I went up as Bob Hope and did the whole show that way.
Pulled those out of the tickle trunk in the closet.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know what a tickle trunk is. It's just a box with
props in it.
You have so many big words.
So Frank,
this is like improv people's thing.
Oh, gotcha.
It's like the props are in there.
Oh,
yeah. You know, you pull out all the hats and the feather boas and all the crap. But that part of the USO thing is established. So now all the videos are coming out where she's bumping and grinding on guys. All the soldiers are humping her leg.
Yeah.
And you go, I understand that maybe Al Franken thought that was part of the act and he was doing, he got caught up in doing the shtick. The picture that everybody's flipping out about, he's grazing the edge of 3 inches of Kevlar and ceramic body armor.
She's wearing a flak jacket.
Like, I used to goof on Joel for like, you know, he'd watch these shows and go, look at this chick on this knitting show. She's hot. And I was like,
I can jerk off to the Weather Channel. That's been established on this show.
Joel loves women so much that he'll kind of go, look at this hot girl on the news. And I kind of go, I don't pleasure myself. I'm just saying I don't do it to that.
If you're demonstrating a vacuum cleaner on QVC, I will watch.
I couldn't get my nut
depending
off.
Depending upon the hemline.
This is about the same effect.
Yeah,
as
that's
touching
fine. That's good.
A body armor. I'm touching this like cabinet, and it's not like I'm really getting my jollies on from like
whatever.
It's absurd. Okay. Yeah. So I think people are going, well, immediately Al Franken's got to go to hell. I'm like, I think you're not reading the situation. I'm not going to say Gene, and then they go, Gene Simmons sexually harassed women.
Yeah.
I went, well, of course he fucking did. Well, it's a smell test. You have to look at the person and go, okay, Harvey Weinstein. I wasn't really shocked by these allegations because I knew, and I've been in the room with him a couple times. I never really talked to him, but he's been like in the hallway on the phone at stuff at junkets. Cause I used to do celebrity, you know, they call the junkets where you go and do the interviews with everybody. And I seen Harvey around a couple times. Everybody thought he was an asshole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody thought he was a bully. There were good stories about Harvey. Everybody's kind of like, Harvey, you just kind of have to deal with. So when it goes to the next level where it's like he's forcing women to come up to his hotel room and watch him shower and all that stuff, that's all believable. Because you have to, at some level, look at the person and look at the goddamn evidence
in
front of you.
But also, it shouldn't matter because who knows privately what somebody is into.
Sure.
And can we tell that from somebody's art what they're going to be like personally or their public persona?
Well,
because there's guys that are good guys who are squeaky clean, and then you hear that they had some kink or they had something or they did a thing, and we know that story.
I found a lot of examples.
You know, Danny Thomas and the glass top table all those things.
But
you don't know. And, you know, I told you about, you know, I read that blind item page, and there's tons of stuff about tons of guys who, you know, I told you about Tom Hanks last time a little bit, or at least I threw his name out there. And he might have been involved in some things that we wouldn't think that, you know, America's favorite actor would be a part of. You know, it could be possible.
God, so, nobody walks on water. That's the thing that I wish everybody could just have a little grace. Everybody makes mistakes. And think about the level of fame and celebrityness these guys are dealing with. You cannot tell me what you would act like at that stage because none of us have been there.
Let me ask you about you. As a woman in comedy, where a lot of Louis C.K. and women have said other things about comedians, and comedians have taken a lot of shit. You know, Bill Cosby and this whole thing. Has this ever happened to you? Has this happened to you? I mean,
it happened to her at the mall. They stole her stuff and put it in the trunk.
But my feeling is, Melissa, and again, I'm not trying to scare you.
I have definitely been taken advantage of. I have definitely been forced to do things that I said no to. But
you're saying in your life, not in comedy, in your private life.
In my private life. Sure. Yeah. I have definitely been in horrid situations. Like, I ended up in a cast. I broke my ankle after one time fighting so hard. Like, that's how bad it was.
Okay, guy tried to force himself.
So, it was bad. It was super bad.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And, but would I ever... every single time alcohol was involved, so I'll say that first. So I need to take responsibility for that. Yeah. I drank the alcohol. I lowered my inhibitions. I trusted more than I should.
Okay.
I thought we were hanging out, having a good time. Definitely didn't go that direction.
Okay.
And I... take full responsibility for being in a spot that I should not be.
Well,
I ended up alone when I could have went with my friends. I shouldn't have done that. Now, I thought we were just going to hang out and watch a movie in one scenario. Well, it didn't happen that way.
But see, that's a different case. Some of these things, like Harvey Weinstein pushed a woman into a hallway when he squirted it on the ficus.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes this stuff is just actual criminal.
Right.
Yeah, some of it is, yes.
Behavior
absolutely.
That's outside of the Louis was what, the Aspen Festival?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's in professional environments.
Well, he was on the set of, what show was he on? The set of the Chris Rock show?
And is that where it was?
Was jerking off with some of the staffers, in front of some staffers in his
yeah,
office.
Yeah, okay, and that is the kind of criminality and,
yeah.
and insane behavior.
That's wrong on every
that's
level.
It's got to be slept up. But when you're talking about, I went up to the room with the guy, you know, like,
yeah,
Bill Cosby obviously had something
right,
deeply
right.
wrong
obviously
with him.
Something
but
was going
but
on.
In no circumstance did Bill Cosby drug somebody and then carry him up to the room like Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
They went up to his hotel room and then he drugged
him. Yeah,
so there is this kind of like, you're okay. right.
Mm-hmm.
There
you
has
to
be some.
You have to always take a little responsibility. Like, okay, how? Because this is how we improve. This is how
yeah.
we get better. Okay, what can I do to be better? All those scenarios that I was in,
okay.
I was like, wait,
but
okay,
listen,
how can I make sure that doesn't happen?
Let
again?
Me bring this back to comedy. Because my feeling is you say this hasn't happened to you in comedy.
No.
My feeling is that this will happen to you in comedy.
Work
I know
more,
enough women in comedy.
Work more urban rooms.
Well,
oh, wait, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, maybe that, but I'm saying the road. I mean,
oh,
Corey and I
is
give this
something inappropriate.
Corey and I give this example of the headliner who needs an opening act, and me and Corey have both opened for this guy. But every time a certain female, or maybe more than one female, would go out, there was all of a sudden only one hotel room for the comics, and they needed to share a hotel room. Corey and I have opened for this guy. There's always been two hotel rooms. Never been a problem.
Now, I've
so,
worked
I mean,
with
that
headliners
thing,
and that operate in a way you're talking
and
about.
And they may try to sleep with you, or they may try to get some off from
Maybe
you
that's
off
why
the
I
road.
Keep my overeating habits. So that I'm less
desirable.
Believe me,
that's not...
Maybe that's why I'm less desirable.
There's other guys whose wives go with them on the road all the time.
But my feeling is...
Because they're under surveillance.
I can tell you, no, absolutely no one that I've hired, without a doubt, 100% has never, ever made an advance or even hinted
but you've heard,
at an advance.
Without naming names, you've heard stories about guys.
I have heard stories,
and there
I
are
have
dirt
experienced
bag
my help
out there.
Getting harassed.
Yes, because you have
I
ladies
have
that work for you.
I have very pretty help, yes, and they have been harassed.
Your Joel is a pretty woman. The girl that seats, or whoever.
Yeah.
Is somebody
yeah.
that and guys
but
will hit on her.
She also puts it out there.
Okay.
She also,
yeah.
I mean, again, if we're going to talk about taking responsibility, she initiates. So then
okay.
what?
All right. All right.
So
that's
now
fine.
You're super
Joel,
gorgeous
in the...
and you initiate. So they start playing back and then you're like annoyed because they send message. Well, what?
In your class, do you teach people don't date the waitresses?
Don't bang the waitresses.
No, because, and I got to tell you, you told
Bill
me that outside
no, there
of class.
No, there is.
Because Bill
is
can't
thing.
Teach that lesson.
Well,
there's an etiquette that needs to be taught.
All right, get it.
There is an etiquette that needs to be taught.
Well,
you
there
taught
is
it
an
to
etiquette,
me outside
yes.
of class. You
yeah,
said.
I don't belabor the point, but yeah, you're not supposed to bang the waitresses. You're not supposed to do that stuff because it will affect your ability to come back. Because
there's drama in your town now.
And if things go poorly and that waitress and that goes back to the manager, it's going to say, you can't have this guy here because he tried to fuck me or
mm-hmm.
this guy. Or we started dating and then we broke up and I don't want that guy here. And the club is almost always going to take... the side of his staff and
mm-hmm.
just go ahead. These comics are replaceable. It's hard to get a good waitress or a good bartender. So you
mm-hmm.
can't do that. So that can happen too. But I feel like it is a thing in stand-up where I've heard millions of stories from women and I know, and I
of what
all of this, I went out with this guy and this guy said, come to my car. And there was a woman I was talking to who told me a story about, I mean, I've heard women who get the Facebook messages, and they've told me some of those, and they're creepy as fuck. And then there's another girl who was like, I went and hung out with this guy. He said, let's go have a drink. And then he goes, I want you to come to my car, and I'm going to eat your pussy. I heard that story from a female comic who told me that. And it's creepy. And, you know, and listen, I'm a guy, and Corey, I'm a guy who's dated female comedians. And I'm
yeah.
proud, you know, but I don't think that makes me a creep because I've always
right.
been respectful
I
and
have...
a gentleman. And there's been female comedians that I would have dated who didn't want to date me where I could have certainly taken it to a step where I would have come off poorly. I don't think I've done that.
I haven't because none of them would have me. So I feel good.
Well, you never know until you
try. Gotta keep asking.
But no,
yeah, but you know, on another hand, okay, one, well, when I was started in open mic, there really weren't a lot of women doing comedy.
There's way more now.
Or there was like, you know, there was Deanne.
Well,
who's a lesbian.
All right.
So, like, you know what I mean? Like, which.
We agree there's a high, there's an adrenaline rush that you have when you come off a stage. Like there's that excitement, you're all jacked up and excited, and they're like, that has a lot to do with people flirting and like commingling.
As I said on Facebook, if you're expecting, and you had to look up Paragon, I said, if you're expecting people in show business to be paragons of virtue, you don't know anybody in show business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is, you're right. If you're a musician, you're a comedian, you're a performer, you get on. You didn't get into that life
to
have
a
9-to-5 regular life.
If you go to sit in a cubicle all day, you don't ever experience that high that we experience when you come off a stage. There's no after lunch poop even that great when you're done with your day.
Well, and there's a lot of giant egos, and that's to Corey's point. Because it's a lot of people who think they're better than they are, and that, you know, the rules don't apply to them. And I think in the case of, you know, Stallone and some of these guys, it's like women don't say no to them. And so when they go up to a woman, they assume that what they're doing will either be accepted or that they will have no repercussions for their actions. And what we're finding out is that some of these guys are having repercussions, and Charlie Rose was fired. Louis C.K. was fired.
Which does not legitimize or excuse if someone told them no and they kept going.
Right.
But it does. Charlie Rose was well known. Speaking of reputations, all this stuff didn't necessarily. You know, everybody goes, well, everybody knew about all. I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
Like I said, I knew Harvey Weinstein was an asshole. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what his whole shtick was. I didn't know what his whole bit was. I've known that Charlie Rose is like at every cocktail party in Manhattan and goes to all the galleries and the party. He's been known as a man about town and a partier and a playboy.
Okay.
So you then go, let's make the leap and go, what was the next thing that happened?
But, you know, again, that doesn't mean you're going to do inappropriate things either.
I think you're right that Charlie Rose got enough evidence that women were into him.
Yeah.
Well, and then they start to have an expectation. I totally get that.
Nobody says Elvis sexually harassed them.
Well, yeah. How many women
You know what I mean? Because Elvis was used to women throwing themselves at him.
Well, and so, how many women slept with Harvey Weinstein willingly?
Wanted
probably to. Lots of them, you know.
I understand the argument that when you start saying that, then you're blaming the victim.
No, and I'm not.
But women took the deal.
Okay,
he did it enough that women took the deal, and he had. You're right. He had an expectation that this was how it was going to work.
This is how it's going to go.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing about all this, and hopefully.
I look forward to years of open micers making hilarious material out of the sexual abusing community.
I've heard, you know, and
I
tell my students this, Cosby jokes almost always get a groan, and you never want to get a groan at a comedy show. People say a groan's as good as a laugh. It is not. A groan means they don't like you, and you want them to like you. Mm-hmm. I've seen guys do Louis jokes now just a few weeks of this story coming out, and those ain't working either. So, comics, here's my advice. Drop this shit. In order to make these things work, you have to figure out, you have to either be really, you know, go contrary to the mood of the country and the common perception and be super funny about it, which most guys aren't, or you need to feed into it, which is that this is bad, which isn't a good topic for comedy to talk about bad things.
Yeah, but you know, we're losing an ability to have comedy to some degree in that people are, I don't know what it is. There's this eagerness to be right and to be just and good and protect people, which is all good impulses.
Yeah.
But then they lose the whole concept of the fucking joke, which, by the way, the joke is also meant to protect and point out.
Well, a joke can be powerful. I mean, Hannibal Buress really brought down Bill Cosby with his bits about him.
They weren't really bits, though. Hannibal just
kind of
called them out.
It was a rant, and that's fine. So comedy does have a power to it that can expose wrongdoings in the world. But I also feel like, you know, maybe comedy is a relief from all the bad news in the world. And maybe something shouldn't be joked about. Or at least now. Let's give it some time. You know, tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Yeah.
And
sometimes,
and that's not the case
sometimes
here.
You're carrying 4x8s. They get loose and you don't have the right ratchet strap.
But yeah,
and that's the
Ba-da. My ratchet strap made it
on, my God, Corey.
Oh, see,
thank
you.
So let's get into some other stuff here. We're going to do our movies, TV, pop culture bit here at the end. Melissa, if you didn't see any of these things, just hang out. You're
well,
good.
I live in the country, but I do have a TV.
You do have a TV.
I actually recently joined Netflix even.
Oh.
I've been watching all of Law & Order SVU right from the beginning.
Yeah, that's not what we're watching. Oh, but that's okay. But again, it's Netflix.
Criminal Minds?
Something
no?
for everybody.
Okay.
Yeah. There's like, who was the guy that had the joke about... I got Netflix, and I'm starting to watch shows. So, yeah, me and my wife are on season 2 of Murder, She Wrote.
That's me.
Oh, was that you? Yeah. No, there's somebody else. It wasn't you.
Well, then I'll
But there's
it.
A guy that has a similar bit. Like, he's like, I'm watching all these. I like watching all this TV, and I like to binge watch TV. Like, it was like, and me and my wife were watching.
I had that.
So maybe someone ripped you off. Well, I can't remember who did it. So that's why I know it's not you, because I haven't seen you on stage in a while. But yeah, there's a guy who was, you know,
well,
hey,
I will
making
now,
the joke about.
I will now. It's so hack. I'm going to drop that right.
Well,
out of there.
Maybe that's the new thing, and then maybe
what hack is the new?
You're
thing?
Well, no, it wasn't hack, and now it's one of those things that somebody came up with a crocodile impression the first time,
God.
And that guy was a genius.
Yeah,
and
should
then
I
it
do
became
some
a hack
Bernstein
thing.
And advantage material.
Well, you could do that too. All right, let's talk about what's going on Netflix. There's a documentary. I know Corey and I both saw it called. Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, about Jim Carrey and when he played Andy Kaufman in the movie Man on the Moon, and it is largely behind-the-scenes footage that Jim Carrey had some people shoot and follow him around the camera, where he acted like Andy off stage and he was in character the whole time, and it drove people crazy.
Yes.
And the only other thing you see in there is a static interview with Jim Carrey talking about that experience and his career.
Well, you get a little bit of footage of him from his career.
Yeah, his career. I said
some
that.
Of his movies.
But that's largely what it is. Corey, you want to give your opinion there? I watched this. This seemed to be the hot thing the last week in comedy. A lot of people talking about this.
I think that this, I watched it and I thought that this was both fascinating and bullshit.
Okay, yeah.
Because I don't trust anything that comes out of the big Zamuda industrial complex.
Yes, I agree.
So Bob Zamuda is the was Andy Kaufman's friend and writer and collaborator, and he would often be the guy who played Tony Clifton. Andy established the character and went on and played Tony Clifton a few times, and then for years Bob Zamuda would show up as Tony Clifton on talk shows while Andy was still alive, and then eventually been doing the character since Andy died.
Right, okay.
And then every couple of years, Bob Zamuda comes out with a book or some kind of movie.
Yes.
Or some stunt where they're like, he's going to show up at the Comedy Store at midnight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the 20th anniversary of Andy's death.
Yes.
And they pull some garbage over and over again. There's a Andy Kaufman industrial complex.
There's a mythology
around
Andy.
That keeps pumping out
the
stuff. And so in this Jim Carrey movie, we see that he went into character to play Andy Kaufman. Mm-hmm. He went, like, full into character where he would refuse to be acknowledged as Jim. Everything was as Andy. He was Andy off stage, which actors do, and it's methody. And that's the method.
Daniel Day-Lewis was Lincoln.
Yes.
Off set. Right. You know, at lunch, he was Lincoln. You had to call him
like,
Mr. President.
My God, there's lights in the sky. Wait, what is this? It's a big iron bird. Oh. He just like refused to believe he was anything but Lincoln.
Yeah, so
it's an actory technique, and Jim Carrey does it, and the footage is wildly entertaining to watch him be like absorbed in this thing. He does stuff like Andy's parents and brother come to the set, and he has like psychodramas with them, or he has like the dad says, "I'm real proud of you, son," and he acts like he's Andy, and like gets all like the extent that he goes to this bit. Is good until you realize that the people filming this whole stuff were Bob Zamuda and Lynn Margulies.
Yeah, it's I will be honest with you. I'm giving a thumbs down to this thing, and here's why. Yeah. I agree that Jim Carrey was great as Andy Kaufman. He did a fantastic job with it. He's fine. The fact that he was a method and stuff is interesting to me. And I enjoyed seeing some of this footage. Like, you always hear the story about the Playboy Mansion and Zemuda went as
Which,
Tony.
Which, by the way, Zemuda should be going to jail
yeah.
in 2017
yeah,
for that.
And, you know, and he believe went, me, they cleaned that story up for yeah. the documentary
he,
a little bit.
He goes, this guy Bob Zemuda went to the Playboy Mansion and people in character in the makeup. And everybody thought it was Jim Carrey in the makeup.
As Tony Clifton.
And then he went to the Playboy Mansion for a couple hours and allegedly
yeah.
got in the grotto with some playmates.
So he had sex with some women who thought they were having sex with
Jim Carrey. Oh.
But
and
then Jim Carrey shows up like 2 hours
as
later.
As Jim Carrey.
As himself. And
they threw the other guy
mind.
Out. And you see Hefner going, getting mad and stuff. Yeah. And that
wow.
That was interesting to see because you've always heard that story. And now you get to see a little bit of it. And you see
wow.
Andy Dick.
Which, yeah, they did clean it up.
And some of those guys.
Oh, when you shock Andy Dick,
yeah.
you really achieve something.
Oh, who's
Andy Dick's upset about
who's the other guy?
Behavior.
Why can't I think of it? John Lovitz you see in uh-huh. a bathrobe walking around the Playboy Mansion.
Wow.
It looks disgusting. And that was interesting to see. But here's my problem with this thing. This thing could have been a 25-minute DVD extra, and it would have been great.
Yeah.
yeah.
But to make a 95-minute document, because all of those shots of him acting wacky are all the same. And it just goes on, and it's just like, not to mention that, and I've said this on the show before, the Andy Kaufman legend thing and, you know, the wrestling thing was real and all this stuff is all mythology. You know, he faked his own death. And I agree. I actually think Zemuda comes off better after this because I think you do see Zemuda breaking that wall down and kind of showing that it is a work on some
yeah,
level.
Yeah, but it's all part
and
of the
Andy
act,
Kaufman,
isn't it?
It is, but I think they let you in on this by the end of this thing. You are sort of let in that it is an act and it sort of breaks the mythology, but 95 minutes is just too long. There's not enough content here to make it interesting. It's repetitive.
And then you've got guys
and
like,
it was boring.
But then you've got people like Judd Hirsch
yeah.
who had to deal with the real Andy Kaufman
yeah.
doing this movie, watching Jim Carrey pull all this bullshit.
Again. Yeah.
And I just felt bad for some of those people that like
right.
were constant. Courtney Love took to it real quick. She
well,
seemed to be in on the bit.
She's a wacky
dingbat. Okay, the part that really kind of bothered me was when Jerry Lawler shows up,
yeah.
the king of Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Jerry the King Lawler, who had the feud with Andy
yeah,
Kaufman.
And they recreated it in Man
and
on the Moon.
Then Jim's like, he really, you know, I went too far with him, and he was really trying to...
Yeah.
I'm like, he's a wrestler.
No,
I don't
and that's
a
why, and that's,
thing
and
a
that's why that's
does.
All shit. Although Jerry Lawler, in one of the interviews that you see, you know, that was done at the time, when he goes, you know, well, Andy was actually my friend. Mm-hmm. So you know, Jim Carrey's trying to act like Andy off stage,
but he's not doing it right.
But he's not acting like Andy really was off stage. He's acting like
Andy like the
bit. On stage, yeah. but doing it off stage. And I think that actually did annoy Jerry Lawler on some level. But I do believe that, you know, that fight. And of course, you see Jim Carrey yeah. faked that injury when they were filming
sure.
the wrestling scenes and went to the hospital and it made all the news. And you see all that. But to me, again, this is like a DVD extra blown up into a feature that really doesn't have the business to be that. It's not really good filmmaking, in my opinion. It was boring.
I did.
Shots went on too long.
I did kind of think the stuff about Jim Carrey's career was kind of interesting.
Okay, his confessional about,
Because Jim Carrey started off doing impressions. You know, mm-hmm. he started off doing I'm Jimmy Carter. He would just do
Henry
all
Fonda
the, like...
Henry Fonda, and, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, if you go to the Comedy Castle, there's a headshot of him,
mm-hmm.
of Jim Carrey doing impressions from, like, 1980.
Forever.
Yeah,
and he's doing like Bruce Dern is one of them.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Who does a Bruce Dern impression?
Yeah, he did.
Anyway,
I impersonated Jim Carrey in my very first show.
Oh, really?
What'd that look?
It
would go something like this.
No, I did the scene from Liar Liar when he is interrogating that girl and talks about you stuffed her like a turkey. That I did that whole.
Well, thing. I thought this went on too long. I know people really seem to buy into the whole Andy Kaufman legend thing. And in a way, here's my feeling about Andy Kaufman. The most entertaining thing about Andy Kaufman is to just watch him do those television appearances. And they were short appearances. He was on
right.
The Tonight Show and Letterman and Saturday Night Live for 3 or 4 minutes, and those things are great. And most people never had to sit through a 60-minute Andy Kaufman special. And the people that are, and to me... If I want to watch an Andy Kaufman thing, I'll just watch that. I don't need to hear about him faking his death. And the wrestling stuff is great when you watch his promos from the
yeah.
Memphis television show. I think that stuff's really great. He was a great wrestling heel.
I
but to me, You know, I think it's a little bit of...
I've absorbed all the Kaufman stuff at this
point. To me, I learned nothing. Yeah, I learned nothing. I've known all this.
I read Lost in the Funhouse, which is Bill Zemi's biography of Andy Kaufman, which is great. Really well worth... Because Zemi tries to do it in Andy's voice, or like to some extent.
Right.
But this whole, like, it's a fake inside of a fake.
Yeah.
It's all an angle. It's all a work.
Yeah.
And it is all wrestling. Andy Kaufman was doing wrestling.
Yeah, he loved wrestling, and that's cool. And I like wrestling too.
To me, it was a little too much.
Yeah, it was. It was.
By the way, we're city guys who like wrestling because we are also
like wrestling, like what I watched in high school, or wrestling
professional,
like,
wrestling.
Professional.
Yes, no, I like high school boys wrestling. I go. And watch. I go to all the meets.
Oh boy!
Well, I don't know. That's all I know.
Let's bring it back.
I watch Seaholm versus.
Are you positive, negative, neutral, in the middle? Where are you at? Five finger scale, how many fingers?
On the 5 finger scale, this is about a 2.5.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so good. I thought you liked it more than me, but maybe you didn't.
I wanted to like it more.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like that Jim Carrey is, because that footage, according to the story, you know, that footage sat in his vault. And we hadn't seen much of it. I don't know a lot of Man on the Moon.
Okay.
I've never even seen Man on the Moon, to be honest with you. But
and Man on the Moon is good, but it's not
no
great.
No
one's sitting around here going,
legendary feature or something.
Yeah, I just got a book on Casablanca that somebody gave me the other day. Yeah. People are writing books about that 60 years later.
Yeah.
Nobody's watching Man on the Moon and going, this is the... whatever. Although I do love... The Truman Show, which they talk about.
Yeah, The Truman Show's good. He's
made
some
good movies.
It's a great
movie.
Eternal Sunshine's one of your all-time faves. And
So I do think Jim Carrey was on to something in that era.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of he was doing great movies.
Mm-hmm.
Way before but it was all really happening.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
To me, there's a Muda factor because I just know I'm being worked.
Yeah.
I know I'm in on the joke that they're doing a fake, and then you're like, trying to be like, we're faking the fake of the fake. Stop.
Although the last shot, I think it's, I don't know if it's a stinger during the credits, that was sort of a joke on Zemuda, was very funny. I give Jim Carrey.
That was good.
And look, Jim Carrey's funny. We can all agree on that. So let's move on.
Good.
I'm going to tell you about a great movie about another guy who's a great comedian. This is a great documentary that you can watch. You have to rent this. I actually have it on Blu-ray, although I rented this. I went and tried to see if this movie was available to rent on Amazon. And when I couldn't find it, I ordered the Blu-ray and went like, okay, I'll just get this. And then the next day it was available to rent on Google. So I rented it and had already ordered the Blu-ray. But this came in. It's called Gilbert. It is a documentary about Gilbert Gottfried, who is called by Penn Jillette the funniest man in the world. And I'm not one to disagree with that because Gilbert's great. Me and Corey have both opened for him. And we've talked about Gilbert a lot on the show. He's been on this show. I recorded an interview with him at the Gathering of the Juggalos. And I got to tell you, we love Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast, one of our favorite podcasts. And this documentary by Neil Berkley, I got to say, absolutely fantastic. I mean, and this is different from the Jim and Andy thing in that I actually think the filmmaking's great in this. I think he did a really great job
of
the whole thing.
It does help that we've met Gilbert.
Yeah, it does.
And I've interviewed him a couple of times. I've worked with him. And the offstage Gilbert is a different guy.
Yeah.
And so if he's, I can tell if I watch this.
Well,
if I'm getting
the thing about this is that's so interesting. It's really about Gilbert offstage more than on. Now, you see clips of his comedy act. Neil Berkley travels with him on the road and they go to some of his gigs. And you see how lousy some of the gigs are, some of the green rooms and some of these hotels. And the way Gilbert travels is he's very eccentric in the way he takes the bus to a gig in Philadelphia, which is very funny for a famous guy like that to be on the mega bus. And you see all that, so it's cute. But, you know, it's also a lot about his family. And it's about his family, his parents, and his two sisters. And then it's about his wife and his two kids. So there's a real parallel between his, you know, the family that raised him and now the family he raised. And his wife, Dara, is all over this documentary. She is, you know, the other star of it. Who really, as Penn Jillette says, Penn's in the documentary and says, I believe Dara Gottfried saved his life.
Aww.
And when you see the way Gilbert lives, you kind of go, yeah, I think that's right. And really charming.
What kind of a saint is Penn's wife, too? I mean,
well, that's probably another guy. You know, Melissa, that's probably another guy who got a good wife later in life and helped him out.
You're lucky because, you know, it takes a hell of a lot to marry a comedian. You're lucky to already
Well, he didn't, though. That's what...
No, I'm saying you had a good setup. I mean, or don't marry, or you don't have to date comedians.
Right.
So that's a real problem.
That's the better thing for you.
That's the better thing.
Comedians are messed up.
Yeah.
No sane person goes, hey, let me drive to Ottumwa, Iowa and talk about my dick to people.
Yeah.
This is a weird thing to do,
but
it's a rewarding and fun and exciting thing to do, but it's not.
Well, what? Okay. You're married. Does your wife give you any praise and adoration for getting on stage and doing stand up?
Sure. But I mean,
really though, like, does she really get into your new material? Do you practice
your
jokes?
Oh no.
That's awesome.
I mean, she'll come. Now the thing is, the difference is I was goofing. Bill's wife came to the show the other night.
Okay.
And she said, oh, well, I don't really get to see him that much during the week.
Yeah.
So I come. Sometimes I'll come to the shows just because we don't get
to hang
spend
out.
Time. And it was local. So, she didn't have to drive to God knows where. But, like, my wife will come to maybe two shows a year, depending on if. She did come to the Frankenmuth show because we brought my parents.
Okay.
The whole family was
there.
Oh,
I know. Goodness. We bought both sets of parents.
They were just rolling in there.
Yeah.
And cousins and everybody.
Yeah.
But she'll come to, if I'm working for somebody big or whatever, she'll come to those shows, but she doesn't feel the need to come to everything I do because she's not crazy.
Yeah. And you see in this documentary, Gilbert's wife at home, and Gilbert is, the kids don't want to see Gilbert go on the road.
Aww.
And it's kind of sad in that way. And they do go on a cruise together because Gilbert is performing on the Impractical Jokers cruise.
Oh, boy.
And Gilbert is just, because he's a city guy.
Yeah.
He does not want to be on a boat in the middle of the ocean. So you see him and his wife out there and Gilbert's not into it. And that was interesting. It's really great. It's really well done. Gilbert is a fascinating guy off stage. He's one of the greatest comedians of all time. You will laugh during this. And his sister was a very well-known New York street photographer.
Oh.
And you see some of her stuff. And I don't want to spoil anything in it, but, it's a lot about his relationship with the sister. And you might even, I'm reading reviews. People cry during this because it is heartwarming. It's really, really well done. I think it's one of the best movies of the year.
Cool.
You can rent it right now. You can buy this. It's funny. This is such a small production that I ordered this Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It was $14. And when it came, I went like, oh, this is a little. It is actually like a burned Blu-ray, which I ordered. It was in shrink wrap, but it's almost like a do-it-yourself kind of deal. But Corey, I know I told you to. I think it's going to end up on Hulu soon because it seems like they. Their name was in the credits.
God knows they plug it. God knows they plug it on this show.
So you can rent it on iTunes, Amazon, or Google Play if you want to watch it for $5-6. You can pick up this Blu-ray. It was $14. There's a commentary with Gilbert, his wife, and Neil Berkeley, which I watched. So I've seen the movie twice now. That was great. And there's some deleted stuff, which is really great. But Corey Hall, you have no money. Or you don't. Well, you won't.
Well,
you won't get $5 out of your cheap ass hands. So take that home with you. And you and your wife can watch Gilbert tonight. And
I just watched a gift exchange.
I do love that it says Blu-ray disc.
It is a Blu-ray, and it is a Blu-ray disc. It looks great. Don't get me wrong. It's not.
This is
a shitty disc or anything. It worked fine.
How,
I played it. It looks good.
How does the video quality compare to Night on Bald Mountain?
No, it's
which is a burned DVD of a comedian.
I think it's
we
a little
know.
Higher. No, the Blu-ray itself looks great. It's high def.
The best
it's
is
nice.
When like guys will like
yeah,
have
I
their.
Know.
Literally, their CD is like burned CDs
yeah.
that they wrote on with a Sharpie.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I asked a headliner once I was emceeing, and he goes, hey, can you plug my CD? And I said, not only will I plug your CD, if you hand me your CD, I will hold it up at the end of the show so people can see what it is, and they'll be more interested. He says, nah, you don't have to do that. And I said, well, what does it say on it? He said, Staples. Meaning he just had the CD that he burned from Staples.
Oh.
And he signed his name to it and sold it for $10. So that was pretty cheap. But no, Gilbert is fantastic. I really think, I don't know that the Oscars will nominate this for Best Documentary because I feel like the subject matter sometimes is why they nominate movies. Sometimes it's politically motivated. But Gilbert by Neil Berkeley is fantastic. It's really one of the best movies of the year. Corey, you're going to love it. Enjoy it.
I'll take a
look. It's a loan, so it's not yours forever.
No, I'm just going
to
watch it.
But bring it back to me next show or whatever. It's fantastic.
Well, I thought this was going
to,
the Jim Carrey thing be on Netflix.
But... Well, I think it's going to be on Hulu eventually, but they want to get some money out of folks. And you don't need to wait for that. Just watch it now. You got a Blu-ray player.
A 10-second rant. I got two of them. A 10-second brief description. Amy was looking for the Hunger Games the other night.
Oh, okay.
Because she watched the first one on cable.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, let me watch the next dopey Hunger Games, whatever. Yeah. And they weren't on any of the streaming services.
Yeah.
Only the last one, which was the part two.
Yeah.
You know, because they split the finale. And so, like, why can't you get all the damn Hunger Games on Hulu or Netflix?
Because I think those are on FX or something.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that happens. The cable, you know, they have a certain window.
Let's not start. Because we'll just go 45 minutes on all the streaming
services. Well, I got
Netflix. And how you going to get CBS and Netflix?
Yeah,
and all
we've done that a million times. All right. Also on Netflix, there's a documentary, really good documentary. I love documentaries. The Long Shot. I think it was maybe just Long Shot. It's about a guy who was, and this thing's great. Here's what's great about this. 40 minutes. The Gilbert thing's like 95 minutes.
I wish this podcast was 40 minutes.
Well, yeah. I know. People were, Long Shot on Netflix about a man who is on trial for murder. He was arrested in Los Angeles for a gang-style execution of a teenage girl.
Wow.
And
that he met in a mall in Saginaw.
Well, that's not exactly what happened, but he's put on trial and
I survived.
Unless he gets an alibi, he's going to be in prison.
Wow.
And he doesn't know what to do. He's a Mexican guy, and you know, there's a witness, eyewitness.
Do they show right from the beginning? Like,
well,
he didn't
you'll
do
see
it?
The whole thing. Well, I mean, you assume by watching it that this guy is going to be innocent. But how do they prove his innocence? And I don't want to give it away because there's a big reveal that is so great. Basically, he goes, well, on the night of the murder, I was at a Los Angeles Dodgers baseball game. And he goes, I can prove it. I have the tickets. But, you know, that's not enough evidence to prove it. And they go, well, what if there was some television footage? You know, they shoot in the crowd. They see this guy in the crowd. Would that prove that he was at the Dodgers game? And they look for that footage, and it's not there.
Mm.
And he hires this lawyer who believes him and goes, I'm going to find this. And he watches all this hours of footage from the Dodgers and all this stuff. And what it turns out, and I'm not going to give it away. You have to watch it. And believe me, if you Google it, you will find out in 2 seconds what happened. But it's fantastic. They happen to be shooting a television show.
Wow.
On the night of the thing. And I don't want to tell you what the television show was because that's part of the joy when you watch this thing. It's really great. It's making a murderer.
It was Guy's Grocery Game. It was Guy Fieri.
Guy Fieri.
He
was buying jalapeno
puppers. He pulled off the murders in between.
So you gotta watch Long Shot. It's so good. It's 40 minutes. You know, it is a true crime documentary, which I know Corey always likes to poo-poo. But this is really a story about a guy that really was wrongly convicted, and the way that his innocence was proven is unique. It's funny.
Do you like,
even though it's about murder, it is still funny and charming, and I don't
do
want to
like
give it away.
Do you like the true crime stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't do much for Corey.
But again, they're all different. And
Snapped,
this one,
my favorite.
Which one?
Snapped.
No, what's that one?
What is that on HLN or something?
Snapped?
True TV?
Oh, that's the one about the women that lose it and they kill their men.
Oh.
Oh.
And then they take you through the whole story.
I'll be on a future one of those, I have a feeling.
You'll have to look up Snapped. You might like that one.
This is somebody's girls I'm hanging out with.
Oh my god.
But okay. But watch Long Shot.
So you're telling me there's a Dateline in the
there's something.
I'm gonna get interviewed and I'll be like, I never, he would hide these women from me. I never saw them.
There could be one in the dresser behind you right now.
He was dating these broads. I don't know who they were.
The man with two families.
What is that guy? Keith Morrison? Is that
Keith Morrison? Yeah.
That's a guy you never want to talk to.
Yeah.
Like if you're getting interviewed by Keith Morrison.
Well, it's Keith Morrison and Josh, the chubby Josh guy. Do you know that guy?
Know.
He's
no,
like a
watch,
chubby Josh.
I don't watch this stuff.
He's a Dateline guy. All right, so that's really good. That's on Netflix. I watched a show called Lore on Amazon Prime, and what they did is they adapted a podcast. Well, hard to believe we haven't made that. No one's made that offer to us.
Who would have thunk of it?
Yeah, but they adapted a podcast. I'll tell you who the guy is that did this thing. It's a guy named, where is this Lore thing? Podcast by Aaron Mankey, and basically it's about medical lore, like true horror stories, things that happened in history that were horrific, things in history that were, legendary. Vampires grew out of a true story that happened in the United States. You'll hear about that on this series. There's one about a guy, a doctor whose specialty was lobotomies. And they recreate all of these things with actors. So you see, you know, some somewhat well-known actors recreating these things. And it's pretty well done. And while this this Aaron guy narrates it, it's, you know, the tagline is "The scariest stories are true." So it's all true stories about, you know, turn of the century medicine and things like that. Pretty interesting stuff.
Wow.
It's pretty good. Well done. Now, look, are there guys making YouTube videos of the same thing? And yeah, it's kind of like that. Or it is sort of like a podcast that you watch, but they're all like 40 minutes.
It was a cold January night in Danville, Illinois.
Well,
Danville.
We pulled into the Days Inn.
It's not exactly.
And at the desk, yeah, they told
you're,
us
you're not.
They
you're
only
not,
had a single room.
Well,
we had to both share the single room. Oh wait, no. Oh, that's a
no. It's not exactly
that's comedy lore.
That
it's
reminds more about, me of another story I was going to tell. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's all right.
Not really.
You don't need to. But
time.
But if you like creepy stuff, I watched three of these lores. The third one, which is about something that happens in Ireland, I could barely understand the actor's accents, and it wasn't as good. But it's worth watching.
See, I don't like true crime. I don't like this kind of stuff, because if I want creepy, I'll just watch the news.
Yeah,
I'll get enough creepy. I'll turn on MSNBC or CNN or whatever.
But it's just one of those.
I'll get creepy all night.
This is one of those things where there's usually sort of a twist ending, and it's pretty well done. I liked it. I enjoyed lore. It was cool.
I'll just read Trump's tweets if I want creepy.
What about anyone a fan of American Horror Story? Speaking of creepy,
that's another thing.
No, never saw that one. I watched some of that, and the new season just ended. It takes place in Michigan, which is weird, even though it's a fictional town in Michigan. It's a smaller town.
See, people confuse Joel and I, but if they ever listen to the show, we have wildly different tastes.
Yeah, very much.
Well,
so.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I liked American Horror Story, but I was watching it because someone else was watching it, and I was watching it with them. So, but yeah, American Horror Story, cult. I'll tell you, they do have a good cast, and I know you've seen some of this guy's. What's the name of this guy who made the show?
Ryan Murphy.
Ryan Murphy made a bunch of these.
I
remember watching the original American Horror Story and thinking it was good, but by the end going, yeah, I think I'm done with this, and I haven't watched it since.
You know, he did Glee, and the first season of Glee was good, and then the second season of Glee, Glee just kept getting worse and worse and worse.
And he did The People versus O.J. Simpson, which we both loved.
Which was great.
That was really good.
He did Feud, Betty and Joan, which was good.
Okay, that I didn't see. But
like, he's real hit or miss. Real spotty. All
but, you know, great cast. Sarah Paulson, who's great, is in this one. Evan Peters, I think he's in most of these things.
She's in all his stuff. All
Billy Lord, who is the daughter of Carrie Fisher, is real good in this. So it's a good cast. Allison Pill, she's married to Sarah Paulson in this, so you get a little lesbian action. Maybe worth watching for that.
Knitting on HGTV.
We've always
not nitty gritty.
We've always wanted. We've always wanted to see Chaz Bono play a male Trump supporter,
haven't we?
So you get to see that on American Horror Story.
Did we ask for that? I don't remember.
Special appearances by Billy Eichner, Lena Dunham. Dermot Mulroney.
Billy Eichner's going to need that because he just got canceled on Hulu.
Yeah, so
it's a good show.
You know, it is a gay thing. There is a gay agenda, it seems, in his work, Ryan Murphy.
Yes,
so there's a lot of that. It's very anti-Trump. It takes the first episode takes place on election night, and Trump gets elected,
you know,
and America.
But see again,
people are outraged.
I don't know if I need to watch a horror movie to tell me that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is political allegory in here. There is a lot of, you know, the cult. It is a lot about modern times and fear of immigration. It all takes place. Killer clown fear is a lot of what this show's about.
I know that.
And that
I
hurts,
know that hits
that
her.
Hurts me personally.
I know. When they hurt your friends and they hurt your pride, you come fighting back from deep inside because you are a real
when it
juggalo.
Comes crashing down and it hurts
I am a real juggalo.
Oh, stop it.
Fight for the rights of all my hoes. I am a real juggalo. Pooping in outhouses in the middle of Indiana.
I have a knob that can make Corey go away, and you don't at home, and I feel bad for you guys.
I got tattoos.
All right, there you go. See how that works? See how that works? No more Corey. No more Corey.
I got fired from Hobby Lobby.
Corey? No Corey.
A real
Corey?
Juggalo.
No Corey. You decide. Let's take a call from Ted Moss. All right, let's move on. Ted Moss is in an RV in Kentucky. Let's talk to him.
Now I feel like I'm being kidnapped.
All right, let's get out of here. Anything else? What should we talk about?
I can't get out of this place. My God, end this show already.
We're going to end the show. Corey, rest in peace, Ann Wedgeworth.
It's the Ann Wedgeworth.
All right, let's get out of here.
They've
fuck
all
you.
Been waiting for.
Fuck everybody. Get out of here. I hate you and everyone.
Jesus Christ.
Ann Wedgeworth played the very sexy Lana on one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, Three's Company.
Woo!
My favorite show.
Way to reach out to millennials.
My favorite. Well,
with your Ann Wedgeworth.
You know, it's funny. You watch. You know, it's airing on cable. It's airing on the sub channels. Three's Company. You can still. I watched one the other day, and it's.
So over the air broadcast and cable, two things millennials.
Well, and then maybe they have.
Wait,
I don't know.
Audience?
I don't know.
I'm gonna get a bunch of hate mail.
Three's Company, very funny, and
love Three's Company.
Lana was the sex pop that Larry was always trying to have dates with, and Jack occasionally would be seduced by very sexy Lana, and she died. The actress that played her, Ann Wedgeworth. So very sad. I enjoyed Three's Company. I think it was one of the great shows of its time, and is still funny today. It's weird that now you have two guys living together and making out on American sitcoms and raising children on, you know, Family. What's the name of that show? The ABC show.
Modern Family.
Modern Family. And meanwhile, Three's Company, Jack has to pretend to be gay so he can live with two women in an apartment in California of all fucking places.
And in like 1978.
Yeah, it's
like, was
it's
that really
weird,
a big fucking thing back then?
Apparently it was. Mr. Roper would not tolerate any
wasn't having it.
Any men and women living together and having shenanigans.
Because now they got Will and Grace is back. Roseanne's going to come back. I heard they're going to redo Hazel.
Yeah.
I think they're going to bring back the original cast to make room for Daddy. They're just going to bring all these shows back.
So Ann Wedgeworth, nice knowing you. And it's sad.
Ann Wedgeworth, Google her and then give her a
song. She was hot. Look up Ann. I got Ann Wedgeworth. You want to see Ann Wedgeworth?
Hot? Okay.
Where's an Ann Wedgeworth story? I know I pulled
one. Now you're getting deep inside.
There's Ann Wedgeworth. She was in she was in Bang the Drum Slowly with Robert De Niro.
Wow, that's exciting.
I bet you would yes.
She was married at one point to Rip Torn.
Oh, well.
And so there you go. She was in Steel Magnolias.
She was not married to Rip Taylor.
Evening Shade with Burt Reynolds. She did a lot of stuff aside from Three's Company, but she's best known for Three's Company. It was very, very. She was in Scarecrow.
Yes, with Hack. Okay, we gotta wrap this up. We gotta pull this into the garage.
Right, let's get out of here. Let's say goodbye to everybody. Thank you for listening. Melissa Hager, I know. Tell us again about the comedy series, where we can find out more information.
You can find us on Facebook, The Comedy Series. Our website is thecomedyseries.net.
Okay.
If you live up north anywhere close to me, or you can look them up online every Monday morning. I'm a co-host on 103.9 The Fox. It's a rock and roll station.
Woo!
It's very fun. And we actually have a Monday morning contest every time I'm there. It's a menage a trois contest.
What happens there?
Well, you'll have to listen.
Oh, my goodness.
You'll have to listen.
We can play that contest right now.
The other blonde female co-host and the male DJ play a menage a trois contest. You should call in.
Anytime they want someone funny on that show, let me know.
Melissa's there to be funny.
Sort them all out.
I'm the Fox Rock comedian.
Radio guys, they're treating you well, though.
Oh, they're treating me
Because radio
great.
Guys always have the comedy chair, and then they realize that, you're making me look bad.
I'm the funny one here. Fuck you.
They've been really good to me.
Okay,
I think
cool.
that.
All right. Well, good. We'll listen to you
Thank
on there.
Thank you for having
Thank
me.
You for being here.
I can't
here.
Believe I got to be on
you're
Joel
on
Radio.
Joel Radio. You did it. You made it
Wonderful.
To the whole show.
So fun.
And listen to me on 9:10 a.m. every Tuesday with Mike Monners around midnight, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Go to 910amsuperstation.com if you don't get that on the radio. If you don't live in Detroit, you won't get it on the radio. If you live in Detroit, you still might not get it on the radio. So go ahead and pull us up online. You can watch us on the webcam there. Corey Hall, where can we see or hear from you?
I, by the way, am now the defending champion of Cinema Roast Crunch.
Oh, congratulations.
which is a local riffing show. Yeah, there's actually a belt and everything.
Wow.
That's like literally like 10 pounds and like... A legit wrestling title belt. I'll show you a picture of. And we're going to do the next one, I think, December 10th as part of the Big Time Garbage Fest. There's Todd Barry, Kurt Metzger's on that. So it's going to be kind of a cool thing.
Good for you.
I'm doing some sets on there somewhere and doing the Cinema Roast Crunch. So look that up.
Corey Hall.
Cool.
Coming to a small bar or tavern near you.
Coming to a veterans a VFW
spaghetti dinner.
Hall somewhere near you.
Spaghetti dinner.
Fish and chips provided by
Bring your Oreos.
There'll be a pancake breakfast fundraiser.
Yes.
With your entertainer.
Yes. You'll see me at a Fuddruckers in Gaylord, Michigan, any minute.
Corey Hall. But thanks again to Melissa. Thank you guys for listening. Check us out at joelradio.net because I'll have links to Melissa's stuff up there. The full archive of shows going back to 2005 is there on joelradio.net. So if you want to hear me interview Gilbert Gottfried, you can listen to that. You can hear Jimmy Pardo's first appearance on any podcast anywhere in the world with Corey and I at Club Bart. That's up there. A lot of good stuff on joelradio.net. Check that out, joelradio.net on Facebook. Let's get out of here. Good night, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.